Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. I hope everybody's having a good weekend. I hope you enjoyed this past weekend fights with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. getting in the ring with Andy Lee and getting a stoppage. You know, I know in the beginning there was leading some controversial already about weighing the gloves. And the Chavez camp didn't want to do that. Freddie Roach was like, no, we're not going to do that. And it just rolled right in. And then during the fight, Junior started complaining of leg cramps and said that he could have stopped him even sooner. And then after he had the post-interview with Max Kellerman and said that he's ready and he wants to shut the mouth of Sergio Martinez. Now, I like now the initiative that he's doing. I like the fact that now he's really stepping up and, you know, stepping up to the plate. Now trying to act more of a champion by saying, I want to fight the best, which is Sergio Martinez. Now, is the kid a lot – is the confidence there because he almost looks like Godzilla to these middleweights? Yeah, I think so. I think it has a lot to do with it. I mean, is he not a big Mexican kid or what, Gabriel? I mean, this he's a big Mexicano.
He's gigantic, dude. We don't generally get that big, you know. Like, Areola is, like, the largest Mexican of all time, as far as I'm concerned. And you look at Chavez Jr., like, what a big middleweight he is. I mean, he's more of, like, a super middleweight waiting to happen. You know, I'm surprised that they're going to go ahead with the Sergio Martinez fight just because of the fact that I wonder if he has trouble making that weight, you know, and what he's losing. But obviously in the fight, I mean, he starts a little bit slow, kind of digs into the body a little bit, works in like punches very slowly, kind of finds his openings, showing a little bit of ring IQ, kind of looking for things and then capitalizing later on.
I like the way he's moving his head.
Yeah,
I got to tell you that.
I don't think he's a, you know, everybody's like, wow, what a vast improvement. And I really didn't think he would go through Lee quite like that. I picked like a 10th round knockout or a TKO, you know. But the way he was kind of crouching kind of reminded me a little bit of his dad.
Yeah.
And getting low and then getting into that body. I really like what he's done. And it doesn't seem like he's lost anything in terms of what he kills himself to make weight and drops those 20 pounds and then rehydrates. He's not like Cotto, who you tap him at 140 and he'd get a little wobbly, or he was kind of economical with his punches because he was meeting out his energy. Chavez looks ready to go. He looks like a problem. And a year ago, if you'd asked me this, I would have said Martinez beats him easy. Now I'm picking Chavez by split decision. I got to be honest.
You know, I'm not going to go that far yet because there are certain things that Chavez Jr. to me is going to leave. He's going to leave a door, not even a crack open. He's got a spring door in front of his home. And what I mean by that, it's not one of those screen doors with the glass on it. It's one of the ones that the cat can scratch through and get through. And to me, Sergio Martinez is a cat that can scratch just enough and hard enough and quick enough to just kind of glide in there like a ninja. You know what I mean? And what I mean by that is that I like the head movement of Julio Cesar Chavez. I like the crouching that he does with his dad. But the speed is everything in boxing sometimes. You know what I mean? You can numify speed. I'm not sure if he can numify the speed of Sergio Martinez. He was certainly able to numify the jab of Andy Lee, and it was because of that head movement. You know, when you're trying to snap that jab and you're not hitting anything, I mean, a lot of the times you're snapping it, and you want to at least hit gloves so it doesn't give that snapping, you know, bone in your elbow. You don't want to snap that elbow because eventually it just kind of wears out, and it starts getting heavy. It starts to hurt, so you start to be a little bit more hesitant. And he started doing that, and you could see he was snapping just to air, consistently just snapping that air. And that played in the hands of Julio Cesar Chavez Junior, but I'm not sure. I'm not convinced yet that he could do that with a guy that has a herky-jerky style, a guy that has speed, a very awkward southpaw, and a guy that can really, when he does land his straight left, there's going to be some authority behind that straight left. So how much do you see of the father in Julio in that fight, and does he revert to the Julio that we saw against a Matt Vonda? That's what I'm kind of curious about. And like, we got a lot of calls right now here on Leaving Ring. If you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. But I got to agree with you. This is a much interesting fight than it was mentioned a year ago. Now we could see whether or not Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., is he going to carry the torch well for his father? You know, I don't think he's going to go as long distance or into the history books as one of the greats, but I think he's going to do a little something, especially if he can get past, you know, Martinez. Then definitely we can't deny the fact that he is he's well on his way to that throne of boxing that we like to put boxers on the pedestal of. I want to pass this to Fight Fans real quick, Gabe, because we're going to be having our first guest on here on 5:15 on Leaving the Ring Radio. So let's hear what some Fight Fans have to say about this past weekend with Julio Cesar Chavez and Danny Lee, and if they still want to talk about Bradley and Mayweather. I did post up that video that was sent to me by I forgot the kid's name. Precise, I think it was Precise Puncher or something like that.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
telling Puncher. And an eye opener for a lot of folks. You know, a lot of people came at me saying, what do you mean he missed a lot of punches? What fight were you watching, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And with those slow motions, you know, the slow play of the tape, you could really see what I was, you know, implying and what I had saw the second time around watching the Tim Bradley and Manny Pacquiao fight.
I remember, you know, when I was there live watching it, I scored the first two rounds for Bradley. And I had so many people, what the hell are you watching? And it's always the, you know, these naysayers. I'm like, well, while you're tweeting at me, you're not watching the fight. So shut up, for one. But two, you know, that was a fight I saw, was Bradley making him miss early on. The more I watch it on TV, and not just that video, but just the fight itself, the more I just go, Bradley's defense was a little bit better than everybody gave him credit for. I think going in, everybody, they look at him as he doesn't have a punch, and so therefore he's not very good. And he's a very versatile fighter. We've always said that. I mean, you've backed him longer than anybody I know. You've had him on the show before I think he ever won a world title. We're very familiar with Tim's style. And he was going to be a problem. We said it was going to be a problem. I picked him to win by split decision. I had different reasons than just that he would win. But, I mean, the bottom line is it was a tough, close fight. The more you look at it, I think people that are going insane saying, absolutely not, it was 8-4. You know, like I literally, you know, I had it like 10-2 live. But I also admitted I didn't have the greatest seat in the world. If I was fifth row, I might have had a totally different score. I like to think that I know how to watch a fight and how to score one. I think that there are some media outlets, and I like to kind of these days look at different media outlets to see what their agendas are, see what they say. I think guys are just absolutely jumping on the bandwagon that there was some sort of corruption here, or the top rank is at fault, or all that kind of stuff. Even though that's what I picked, was it's better to build a brand off an old brand than it is by itself. That's why I picked Bradley by split decision. I think their own media biases and their own allegiances to certain fighters are the reason that they're picking and being so behemoth. I think, you know, if we're asking for good judging, then we have to be good judges ourselves, and a good judge is impartial. I'm not seeing a lot of impartiality these days in boxing. Particularly in this fight.
Exactly. No, I agree with you. Let's patch in some Fight Fans. Let's talk to them. We've got 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. So if you don't get through right away, don't worry, man. Stay on the line. Listen to the show. We got a good show coming up here for everybody. We got some upcoming fights to talk about. And like I said, we still got some fights of the past, you know, to talk about. Adamic and Chambers was a good fight. That was hosted by Main Events and on the NBC Sports Channel. So let's patch in the first guy that's been on hold for a few minutes here. Miguel wants to talk Chavez and Lee and ask Gabe about Mayweather. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
What up, what up, what up? And, hey, Gabe, I must have missed something, or I might have missed a podcast when you were talking about this rumor that Mayweather was going through, and I don't remember what it was, but... Yeah, I was just wondering what that was exactly.
Oh, you're talking about the when I printed the Golden Boy letter that they talked about the three positive tests, and you asked me the question that everybody else asked me. When was that article? Where did you say that? Or when did that happen? Right?
Yeah.
That
never
article
did.
Never existed. She never
yeah.
came out. They accused me of a rumor, and my question to them is, where did you guys hear the rumor? And where did you hear
I've
that
had,
I was spreading it?
You know what?
I've had
emails.
I've never spread that rumor. I've never written that story. The first
okay.
time I ever saw it in print was when they sent me a legal threat telling me to stop spreading the rumor. So my question still stands. Golden Boy, where did you guys hear it, and where did you hear I spread it? I'd love an answer to that. I'd love the writers like Kevin Ioli call me an arrogant ass. Calling me basically on a witch hunt. That was actually Danny Howard, who calls himself a writer with a spine, who works for FloydHype.com, and another writer who's kind of taking a shot at me, whose name I won't mention, but we all know because he casts a giant shadow. I'd like them to go to Golden Boy and ask them those questions instead of attacking.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, because, I mean, they kind of... There are people that are saying that I kind of trashed Floyd's name. Really, Golden Boy kind of trashed my name by accusing me of doing that. I took as much damage putting that out in the public as they did. But I'm the
okay.
one not getting bent.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure that out. I thought I missed something for some reason. I don't know. I was like,
yeah,
no,
I believe me. If I was breaking that story, I think I would claim it, you know?
Exactly. So, I was thinking about how Chavez looked against Andy Lee, man. I heard you guys talking about how he is a big Mexican. Shit, man, he probably ate a lot of fucking McNuggets as a kid.
McNuggets? He ate
McNuggets.
A lot of frijoles and rice, man. Tamales was
all them damn hormones in the chickens and shit now, you know?
Yep.
So that's what's happening to everybody. But, I still think that... that Sergio could pull it off. I think he's going to get in. Like you said, he's got a big open door in his defense. That Sergio's is going to get in and get out and steal a couple fucking pieces of jewelry, get out, steal the TV, same thing. So, I mean, that's just my opinion, you know.
It's a huge possibility, you know, but this is the thing that has to be put in factor is that when you have a good smaller man against a good big man, and the big man could take the punishment that the smaller guy is doing, eventually the smaller guy's legs, they wear out. Because all the power punching and try to move the bigger guy forward, it takes a lot out of him. You know, it's really difficult to prepare yourself and be mentally ready to try to push back a light heavyweight. And that's what makes this fight, to me, more interesting, is that you got a seasoned veteran fighter that his confidence is ultra high. He's the undisputed middleweight guy. And then you got a kid that has been raised with a silver spoon that has been gradually prepped up for this moment. Now, who has more to lose here, Chavez or Martinez? And that's what we're going to find out if they do face each other in September, you know, is who has more to lose and who wants to hold on to what they have at that moment. That's what makes a really good match.
I think it would be Chavez that loses more than anything because, I mean, he has to live up to his dad's name, basically. That's what he's been fighting his whole life, you know?
To us as boxing fanatics, boxing guys that watch this sport very closely, you're absolutely right. But to the casual guys, you know what I mean? I mean, to the dudes that are in the yards working, the steel workers and the plumbers and the electricians that occasionally that have been kind of, you know, swept away from our sport, that get a glimpse of our sport, a loss to them is not going to be much. Because to them, they're like, I don't even know who Martinez was, you know?
Exactly. That's why I think Martinez has less to lose. I mean, if he, you know, I think that he has everything to gain if he beats Chavez, though, because he's far more known than Sergio is. So,
hey, but I tell you this, if Martinez wins, and he wins with fashion, let's bet who gets another pay-per-view event first, Chavez or Martinez? Who has the better promoter?
Exactly. He's got Bob Arum, dude. He's got the fucking devil in the flesh, you know?
Hey, Miguel, thanks, man. Put you back on hold because we're going to have to call in our first guest, but thanks for the call, brother.
All right,
thank
no
you, man.
Problem, man.
That's the
funny,
thing
right?
there. You know,
before the show, we were talking about that. Where's that article? It doesn't exist.
It doesn't.
It never happened.
You know, I get emails, too. They're like, hey, Dave, can you direct me to the podcast or to the show, the segment where you guys were talking about this rumor? And I'm like, we never did because it didn't happen. Never talked about it. It was never written. You know, this was just a rumor that was – this was a rumor on top of another rumor that was made up, not through us but from Golden Boy. You know, I mean, the rich kids, they made it up, and now they don't want to be accountable for it. Go figure,
well,
right?
You know, I don't know if they made it up or not. But like I said, my questions are really simple for them. Where did you guys hear it?
Well, they're
where
the
did
message.
You hear that I was, where did you hear I was spreading it?
Right.
I would love the big guys. I would love Dan Raphael, Kevin Ioli, the guys that have the biggest audience, that have the most responsibility to this sport because they have that big audience, to ask those questions of Golden Boy instead of deriding me.
Oh, they
Dan's
won't.
Doing it passive-aggressively. Kevin Ioli just did it straight up on Twitter telling me I'm beating a dead horse. And for those of you guys that don't follow MMA, I don't really. I follow drugs and combat sports. The day after Kevin Ioli told me I was beating a dead horse and a lot of bloggers celebrated it, again, not being impartial to kind of taking shots at me, a person they don't know. The next day I broke, and the MMA people, those writers actually did give me credit, that Rafael Cavalcante, the best friend, chief sparring partner of Anderson Silva, essentially the Floyd Mayweather of the UFC, tested positive for stanozolol. I broke that out and broke that right at Kevin as a way of kind of saying, you really think this is a dead horse or do you think it's a major problem? And with that introduction, let us call in our next guest.
Absolutely. Let's call him in and let's speak to the dead horse.
Yeah, I mean, that's what kind of, I guess when you make the call, I'll filibuster. But to me, it's a widespread problem, and it's coming to light. You know, the story done by Jeffrey Ciani on EastsideBoxing.com that's on my Twitter feed right now about the Chavez Lee situation. He actually did very solid investigative reporting, looking into actual eyewitness accounts.
Yeah, can I please speak to Larry? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leaving the Ring Radio.
You're speaking to Larry.
Hey, Larry, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us, especially right now in, you know, and what particularly is going on in your career, which has got to be a death blow to yourself, you know, being suspended for 4 years. I'm going to let my co-host pick it up from there because I know he's been itching. He's been wanting to talk to you, and he set this all up. And he's going to set the tone of the interview. So go ahead, Gabriel.
First off, Larry, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on. And
thanks,
do me the favor and Dave the favor of pronouncing your last name so that we don't butcher it.
It's Olubamiwol.
Olubamiwol.
All right.
That's correct.
Olubamiwol. Okay. I can't promise you I'm not going to screw it up later on, but, you know.
So you can call me Larry O.
Larry, okay, I like that.
Larry, yeah. Just named the War Machine. Now, Larry,
yeah.
Most of the American fans, you know, UK fans know UK fighters. We know some of the stars that come over, you know, you guys know some of the stars that come over, and it's likewise here in the U.S. So first off, let's just start off, introduce who you are in the sport, your division, you're a heavyweight, how long have you been fighting, how did you get into fighting? Because I know you had a background in another sport beforehand. So just give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. Basically, I used to be a sprinter, specializing in 100 meters and 200 meters. And I got seriously injured twice. I pulled my hamstring. And the second time, it was quite bad. And I didn't have the funds at that time to really treat myself well. So it got to the point where I really had to give up track and field. But the thing is, when I had the off season from track and field, I always used to go and do boxing training because I just love boxing. Once I gave up track and field, I decided to start, start boxing full time. That's how I basically started out. I then had an amateur career, and and then decided to turn pro afterwards. Turned pro in 2008. Had 13 fights, 10 wins, 3 losses. And, currently find myself in the situation I'm in now where I'm banned for 4 years for taking performance-enhancing drugs.
Now, how did that lead into that? I mean, how did they find out? Did you disclose that on your own, or was this during testing and then it just came about?
Basically, what happened was the Americans started an operation called Operation Raw Deal. And the information they gleaned from that, they fed back to the UK anti-doping people over here. That, you know, my name obviously came up, my address, that I've been ordering stuff from China to my address. So UK anti-doping then target tested me in my last fight because of that information. And when they announced that I tested positive, they then informed me that they had this evidence against me and that the emails that they had stretched back to 2007. So they asked me to cooperate with them and to tell them basically about my usage from when they had that information. Now, I didn't have to. I could have just accepted a ban and that's it. But, you know, I decided that, you know, everyone should know what's going on, basically, you know, what I was using and also how I was able to get away with it for so long. And that's why I decided to basically tell them everything that they wanted to know.
Now, were you introduced to any of the supplements that you were putting into your body? It was 13 different types of supplements you were putting in. So were you introduced to this through a conditioning coach or a coach or a boxing coach? Or was this just something that merely that you decided to kind of find out a little bit more and dig yourself?
This actually went back to my sprinting days because my use started then. And that then I was introduced to it by another sprinter. And, you know, obviously I knew, I read Speed Trap by Charlie Francis. I knew the facts of life. So when I was introduced to it, I wasn't alien to the whole idea and concept of performance enhancing drugs. So I was introduced to it then. And then when I took up boxing, from looking around and seeing the different cases and different fires, different, you know, speaking to a few people, I gathered that the same was happening in boxing. So I decided myself to administer myself with these substances and to form a protocol by myself. I do actually have a degree in pharmaceutical chemistry. So it's, you know, I do have knowledge of these substances, so it wasn't very hard for me to be able to do that by myself.
Wow.
What were the other substances? The 13 substances.
The thing is that part of it has been blown out of all proportion because they've reported it as all 13 being performance enhancing substances. Whereas in reality, it was probably 5 or 6 that were performance-enhancing substances, and the rest were things you take to alleviate side effects or to get your testosterone levels back up after, you know, using a course of steroids. So they weren't all performance-enhancing substances. Probably half of what I took was performance-enhancing, and the rest were ancillaries, as they would call it.
Now, let me ask you this, because you were caught with EPO, and that interests me because that's a blood doping. For people that don't know, it's a blood doping drug that increases red blood cells, more oxygen to the blood, more endurance, essentially. It's a cyclist drug of choice. In June 2010, the Nevada State Athletic Commission basically had a debate over whether or not to begin implementing, you know, more blood testing or blood testing in general. And it was shot down by a guy named Dr. Robert Voigt, Floyd Mayweather's personal physician out of Las Vegas, but was also the chief medical physician for the United States Olympic Committee. He said, we don't need blood testing. Now, as a guy that used EPO, a professional boxer, and got away with it essentially until they target tested you, and they basically caught you through intelligence, what do you think about blood testing in a sport? Do we need it? And is EPO a problem?
You see, blood testing is, first of all, urine testing is actually more expensive than blood testing, which I think a lot of people didn't realize.
Yeah.
Also, blood testing is good for some things, but not for all things. So, for instance, the steroids, yes, blood testing is great. The EPO, not so much. And this is why, for instance, the UCI, the guys who run the cycling, they with their blood testing, they only test for your hematocrit. They don't actually test directly in blood for EPO. What they say is, right, your hematocrit cannot go over 50%, because if it goes over 50%, then we deem you to have used either EPO or whatever substance to elevate that level. So as for EPO, I don't necessarily think blood testing is the way to go. Urine testing still seems to be the best way at the moment to be able to find someone who's been using it.
Do you think the testosterone is probably more the drug of choice? Or do you think there is a drug of choice? Or is it just kind of part of the culture that use different types of things in order to get some sort of advantage?
I think it depends who you speak to. Some people would say testosterone is the drug of choice because of what they've heard or, you know, what other people are doing, whereas other people like myself will experiment with different things to see which could give the best effects, because everyone's different at the end of the day. And, you know, what works for one person might not necessarily work for another. So that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say testosterone is a drug of choice, but for some people it might be construed as being a...
Let me ask you this, because when I read your story and I gathered more information about you, Larry, when I found out it was a 4-year suspension, and then I look back at other athletes that have been caught for doping and or taking any type of antibiotics or growth and hormone, it seemed like the charge was much, much lesser. Why do you think that you got slapped, not with the book, but with the library of law?
Good question, and I'd like the answer to that, basically. I guess it's because I'm not a commodity like the other guys that you're talking about. I mean, I'm quite well known in my country, but obviously I'm not well known across the world, especially in America, although that's probably changed now. But you know, I think that for instance, James Toney, I mean, under UK anti-doping rules, would have been banned for life. His first suspension was 90 days. His second suspension was 10 months, less
right.
than my first one. You know, and you get guys like Roy Jones who tested positive, and nothing happens to them. You know, some excuses made, and they get off of it. At the end of the day, these guys have the money, so therefore they can afford the lawyers that I can't afford, and are able to either get a much shorter sanction or get away with it. And that's what it seems to me to have happened. Basically, they make the little man the scapegoat.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to, you know, kind of walk into, was the whole thing is that you feel that you are an scapegoat, or do you think that they needed somebody to use an example so that when you have reporters like Gable or myself or others that are going after these organizations, they can go, well, we have a guy, and we did our job, and here he is. His name is Larry O. But let me ask you, when you find out like Roy Jones and guys with bigger names like James Toney that get a pinky flick on the wrist, and do you look at them as, you know, well, let me ask you this before I even ask that question. Do you look at yourself as you cheated the sport and this four-year ban is a righteous ban? It's a fittable ban because it fits the crime.
To be fair, no, I don't, because first of all, looking at the other sanctions that the other guys, bigger name guys, have had, it's not fair. You know, it's not fair, and a lot of people have made a big deal of me making a big deal of that, saying, well, it doesn't matter, you still broken the rules. But at the end of the day, these are the guys that we look up to. You know, this is one of the reasons why when I look at guys like, you know, when I was younger or just getting into boxing, I look at guys like James Toney, Roy Jones, the guys who are at the pinnacle of our sport, and you see that they're using things. I think to myself, well, first of all, obviously you have to use these things to get to the top or to get to a stage where you can make some money. Second of all, if you do get caught, the sanctions are not likely to be that severe. So therefore, you can still get on with your career as these guys have done. So that was my thinking at the time. That was my mind frame at the time. And, you know, I've looked at these guys, seen what they're doing, and concluded, as I did in track and field, as a lot of people did in other sports, that this is what you have to do to reach the top. And I personally feel that there's an unwritten rule between athletes and, you know, boxers included, that this stuff goes on and you just get on with it. You either decide to do it or you don't, but either way, that's the sport. And
you don't look at things now, though. I mean, now that you're in this situation, there's no turning back the clock. There's no undoing the ban, though, that rather than following the rest of the crowd, maybe being an individual and making a different type of stance would have gotten you even further?
Further in the sport, you mean?
Yeah, further in the sport. Maybe further in, I don't know, you know, and I hope I don't sound too either arrogant or maybe not a, how could I put it? Too harsh, Larry, but
yeah.
Don't you think that, and I'm speaking just because, you know, these are questions that are going to be berated by us, by our listeners, if we don't ask these type of questions here, okay? So I hope you don't take this any way inoffensively. There's nothing against you, but this is going to be a tough question for you, okay? Don't you think that sometimes, even though other athletes are doing this, there's got to be a morale standard, and you crossed it. So there shouldn't be no sympathy and the consequences you have to face because you broke a rule, the rule has been broken, and it's been enforced.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. But you see, here's the thing. If you break, I'm not disputing that I've broken a rule and I should be punished. I've never disputed that. I've never said that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
I knew the rules when I came into the sport and I've broken the rules and I should be punished. No problem. If everyone else was uniformly punished,
right,
then that's not a problem. If James Toney got 4 years or banned for life, if Shane Mosley got 4 years, then of course it's perfectly applicable for me to receive 4 years, and I'll just shut my mouth and get on with it.
I agree.
The problem for me is that there's no uniformity in these sanctions, and that probably might have made me think, okay, well, you know what, if this guy got 4 years, that's a large chunk of his career gone. I might not, maybe even if he's doing it, maybe I shouldn't do it. That might have swayed my thinking, but that didn't happen. Do you see what I'm saying? So
you also cooperated. You were forthright.
Precisely.
I did all these things. Those other guys aren't forthright. And then James went out and he got popped again. And he's still allowed to fight.
He got popped again.
For titles.
Precisely. And this is what I'm trying to say.
Really, I'm not really like I try not to take too much of the high moral ground in boxing because it's the dirtiest sport I know. But he fought for the crowning glory. He fought for the heavyweight title of the world, juiced. That's insulting to everybody in the sport. It should be. And yet we just blew it off. Here's my thing, my question to you. You broke the rules of boxing set down by other people, by the commissions. But isn't there another rule, kind of not printed anywhere, but kind of an understood rule that everybody does this, that you're not the exception, and that really when you're getting in the ring with somebody, 9 times out of 10, maybe 8 times out of 10, the guy across the ring is just on the same shit that you are. Wouldn't you think that? I mean, you didn't break that rule, in my opinion.
I would agree to that. And a lot of people will give me a lot of stick, especially here, because I keep saying this, because they believe that, you know, it's only 10% of guys who are doing it. And I accept there's probably not as many guys doing it in the UK as there are in the US, but there are a large minority. And I'm not saying this because, I'm trying to lessen, you know, the attention on myself. I'm saying this because I have seen people, boxers, buying stuff from the same guy that I bought stuff from. I have spoken to boxers who are telling me they've done this and done that, and is this good? Have you tried that? You know, boxers that, if I was to mention names, would blow people's socks off, you know. And obviously I'm not going to go down that route, but I do feel it. I mean, when I was in track and field, there was definitely an unwritten rule, and guys knew it. And I feel it's the same in boxing. There's an unwritten rule between the boxers that, you know, you do what you have to do. At the end of the day, like you said, it's a very dirty sport, and we're all in this sport to make money. Regardless of what anyone wants to say, we're all in this sport to make money. And, you know, you do what you have to do. Not to a certain extent anyway. I mean, I wouldn't load up my gloves. But at the end of the day, even with these substances, you have to work hard. You know, these substances alone do not make you, you know, a champion. In fact, you have to work even harder than a natural guy to take advantage of the benefits of these substances. So, and this is what a lot of people don't seem to realize. You know, so it's not a quick fix, you know. But I realized that I entered boxing late, and therefore I needed to get to a level. Yeah, basically. And I needed to train my guts out, and I needed a recovery aid, and that was one of my reasonings also for doing this, you know.
Is that really the deal?
I definitely think there's an unwritten rule between boxers, definitely.
What would you estimate, 20%, 30% of boxers? Like you said, it was kind of a large minority. How many?
I would estimate that it would be worldwide. If I'm talking about the UK, I would say it's about 30%. If we're talking worldwide, I would think it's a lot higher than that, and I'm being conservative with my estimates, because what people need to understand is that in the UK, at least, unless you are fighting for a British title upwards, you don't get tested. You don't get tested. It's as simple as that. You do not get tested. So there's nothing to stop anyone knowing this. There's nothing to stop anyone using up to British title level.
Wow.
Now,
God.
So, and this is why I was able to get away with it for so long, because I hadn't fought for a British title at that point. I did fight for other titles and had title eliminators, which were not tested for. I had an English title eliminator that I was not tested for. I had a Southern Area title fight, which I won, and I wasn't tested for. I had an International Masters title fight, which I won, and I wasn't tested for.
Let me ask you this, because you're not being tested, you know, any time before that, before a British title. But was there any casual talk amongst officials and yourself or anybody about substance that you got, that you were taking, or another fighter was? I mean, was that something of norm to discuss with? I mean, before they caught you, and had an open case, were any of those people that were now sitting across from you, were they aware of the substance abuse before it was brought to their attention on a black and white piece of paper?
I don't think they were. No, the officials, that is. No, I don't think they were. Other boxers were. Other boxers that I spoke to that I knew were doing the same thing were. I think even Gabriel is privy to a conversation that took place on my Facebook today, where I was outing a former amateur boxer who I trained with, because he was saying I should have been banned for life, when in actuality he asked me for advice on substances that he should use. And I was quick to remind him of that he was such a hypocrite for saying I should have been banned for life when he was asking for advice. And I never said that he asked to use anything, but the fact that he asked for advice, and I did advise him actually not to use what he was planning on using. Now, I don't know what he went and did after that. You know, he could have thought, well, screw that advice, I'm going to go buy the stuff anyway and use it. I don't know. So, and it's these sort of things that people need to understand. That's how widespread it is. If that can happen at the amateur level, this is what people are not realizing, especially people in this country. If that conversation can happen at an amateur level, think about how many people are having that conversation. Do they just think it was just me that was having that conversation? No, of course not. It's idiotic to think so, you know. And then when we get to the pros, the amount of people that I've had the same conversations with, and actually discussed using substances, is you know, is tenfold of that. So, you know, you have to make a conclusion from that. I mean, a lot of people are saying I'm saying this to, because I've been caught and I'm bitter and whatnot. I'm not actually bitter, to be honest with you. The only thing I'm not happy about is the disparity in the sanctions between me and some other guys. But apart from that, I knew a book of rules. I knew, you know, they say don't do the crime if you can't do the time. You know, I was fully aware of what would happen if I did get caught, and so I'm not moaning and groaning about being banned. But at the same time, there has to be a level of uniformity, and that's the only thing that I'm talking about.
I, you know what? I got to tell you this, Larry. For a guy that's just been banned for 4 years, and it's basically, as you know, you work so hard, regardless of how people are thinking of you. They're like, well, he cheated, Dave, regardless. But regardless of that, like you said, you have to work two times harder to see the performance out of the stuff that you're putting into your body. And hearing you right now, it seems like you're at a peace with it, or almost with a calm of what is going on in your life right now. Am I right about that?
Yeah, because I know what's going on. Basically, you see, you got the other guys who have been popped recently. You got the Mont Peterson. You've got Andre Berto. You've got these guys who have probably just shied away and hid away. And I'm not doing that. Now, I'm not doing that because I'm proud of what I've done. No. I'm not doing it because of that, but I'm not doing it. I'm not shying away because people are saying to me, on one hand, oh, we want the sport clean. So I'm saying, okay, you want the sport clean. Well, I can tell you that there's lots of people doing this. And then on the other hand, they're saying, oh, well, you're just saying that to take the shine off yourself, to take everything off yourself.
And has there been any people reach out to you, maybe trying to find insurance in themselves by talking to you that you don't out them out? I mean, have you seen that? Guys that you haven't talked to in a while?
No.
They're like, yo, Larry, how you doing, man? I haven't talked to you like in 5 years, dog, but.
Nah, I think everyone knows me. Everyone that knows me and has had dealings with me knows the kind of person I am. The fact that I still go on the forums shows everyone the kind of man that I am. I'm not going to shy away from anyone. And obviously also I'm not going to out anyone, because, this is all about me. Whatever they're doing, the anti-doping people need to do their job and find them. That's their job. So I'm not going to take anyone down with me because, they weren't involved in what I was doing. So, each to his own.
Yeah, I think you hit on something, that people want the sport clean, but it can't be just a PR stunt. That if you want it, it's going to be kind of painful, and we're going to have to out a lot of people, and we have to be really serious about the fact that we're actually cleaning it up, as opposed to just kind of doing. I mean, I applaud, Floyd Mayweather and all the fighters, Nonito Donaire, has just gone all in. He's going to do 365, 24/7 testing with WADA. Floyd USADA, he tests his fights. I think those are nice individual efforts, first steps. But I really do applaud you for being forthright. That's how I found you, was I was looking on BoxRec for something else, and that article came up, and boom, I was like, I got to talk to this man. And what I loved about what you said was you said, how am I cheating if everybody's doing it? And that's why I say there's two different rule books. There's the British board or, the Nevada State or all the commission rules. But then there's this kind of honor among thieves, among the boxers, that we all do this. This is the culture. I spend a lot of time in gyms. Dave does too. You hear the stories. And I even had one fighter come up to me and say, why are you doing this? Everybody's on it. It's the culture. So let me ask you this. How you talked about recovery. When we talk about performance-enhancing drugs, is the name of the game really about recovery so that you can work out and get gains? Or did you feel like I got stronger, I hit harder, I could take a punch better because you were on the drugs?
For me, it was only about recovery, to be honest. I was always big. I was always muscular. I was always strong. People looked at my physique and said, oh, he was blatantly a user for my physique. But I always looked like that. It's genetics. If I never touched the steroid, I would still look very big and muscular. So it wasn't about that. For me, it was all about recovery. Because when I was training, I was training 6 days a week, twice a day, and had a job on top of that. So I would train in the morning, go to work, finish work, train in the evening, go home. And believe me when I tell you that, the distance between work and training, was very far. I mean, it took like 1.5 hours to get from the gym to work, and then had to do the same trip again afterwards. So all of this takes a toll on your body. So obviously you need, I felt I needed, a tool to help me recover faster so I can put in the work and put in the hard work. So for me, that was basically what that was for.
How accessible was it? You said you kind of got your education. You have a degree, but you got it kind of indoctrinated into this as a sprinter. How widespread is it there? How casual is it there?
Even more casual than boxing. You'd go to the track to train, and after the pleasantries, it'll be nitty gritty talk straight away. It's pretty raw in the track and field game. It's in your face. Yeah, well, it was when I was doing it anyway. I don't know how it is now because I don't keep in touch with many of them now. But it was pretty in your face by at that time.
Wow.
This is really, it's kind of blowing my mind. And, somebody, before I forget, the Boxing Asylum, website.com, they've asked you to please join everybody on Twitter and to start an account and to interact. I really think, Larry, you know, you and I talked about this today about, you know, you were curious how people out here feel about you. Because people out there are kind of vilifying you. I think that the more you are open and honest about this, I mean, you're enlightening us, you're educating us to something that, you know, I had a writer tell me that I was beating a dead horse. From a major news source, tell me I was beating a dead horse with regards to PEDs. I think tonight we're beating the hell out of that poor horse.
Yeah.
But it's the truth that this is, we are on the sport, that you're not an exception. You're almost the rule. I don't know if we can clean up the sport, but brave people like yourself who come forward and say, okay, I did this, I'm going to take responsibility, and I'm going to educate everybody. We need you. We need people like you. So I thank you again.
We need guys like you, Larry, that are going to take a stand. I mean, regardless, if it sucks that you're in this situation, you know, it really does. You know, I feel for you, man, and I feel for you because of the criticism and the, you know, that people that are, they're not going to want to take the time to look into your story. They're not going to want to take the time to really have an open mind that when you're surrounded, you know, when you're surrounded by certain things, you know, I mean, I grew up in downtown San Jose, off of 7th Street in California, and there was three things that went that was normal in my neighborhood: selling drugs, being a gangster, and trying to get out of there with one way of either being in the music or being an athlete. And you either fell in one of those three. And it sounds to me that, you know, when we're going to track and field as a young man and you're being surrounded, it doesn't seem bad. You know, it doesn't seem like you're crossing the morale stage. You're just doing exactly what others are doing because it's in a way it's normal, right?
Yeah, pretty much it. And you know, also when you factor in that a lot of people are trying to make money from these sports, you know, at the end of the day, sport nowadays is big business. It's it's not about just taking part. You know, it's big business. And you know, winning and losing, you know, it could mean the difference between, you know, having a great lifestyle and basically, you know, and so people are looking at this and saying, well, I have got to do what I can to win and make money for myself and my family. You know, that's how people are looking at it. You know, and who can begrudge someone that? You know, if everyone's doing it, or a lot of people are doing it, or the people at the top are doing it, and you're trying to reach the top, what choice do you have? Do you either say, I won't do it, and I will not bother to try and, you know, make money for myself, or you say, right, okay, I'm going to do this so I can be at the top and make money for me and my family. It's basically that choice, you know, and, you know, you go one or the other. It's as simple as that, basically.
Yeah, it is as simple as that. You know, I don't think anybody could sit there with a straight face and say, well, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to feed my family. or I don't want to do that because I don't want to have my face on a Nike poster or something. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think it's really tough, especially people that just watch the sport and they're not athletes. You know what I mean? I mean, we could judge all we want. We're just two guys that do a radio show. But until we're in your shoes, we will have more of an understanding. That's why we wanted you on, so that we can have that perspective. We can have a chance to face that man in the mirror and understand where your thoughts and how it was processed at that time and where it's at this moment. Go ahead, Gabriel. You were going to say something.
Well, I think you kind of set the table a little bit. Well, one, you know, they're not testing anybody until you start fighting for a title.
Right.
But you've got a degree in this, in pharmaceutical chemistry, so I think you'll know what I'm talking about when I start getting into TE ratios and that. Let me ask you this question, and I don't want to throw everybody under the bus, you know, and I think you probably should save some things. You know, this has got the makings of a great book, Larry. I think you should save something for yourself. But, okay, in Nevada, in the U.S., you know, really in the world, you know, the World Anti-Doping Agency has set the TE ratio for 4-1, right? And any doper knows that, or anybody juicing, or however you, whatever you want to call it, knows that. But in Nevada and New York, it's 6-1, 50% greater. Do you see that as some sort of bureaucratic complicity? And across the board, I mean, if they're not testing anybody until they get to a title shot, isn't that kind of the sport saying it's okay as long as you don't get greedy and we don't catch you?
In a way, yes. I mean, I'm actually quite baffled. I'm perplexed that it's still 6-1, because 6-1 was the old ratio. And then the World Anti-Doping changed it to 4-1. So why is it that New York and Nevada still have 6-1? Are they not with WADA? Are they not affiliated with WADA? Do you know?
They are. They use, as Keith Kaiser said to me, we use some of WADA's stuff, but some of WADA's stuff is silly, so we don't use it. And the reason he uses, that was a direct quote. He said 6-1, if we went to 4-1, his concern is that there would be a lot of false positives, and he wouldn't want to do that. I don't buy that answer for 1 second.
You see, this is what I'm talking about with the uniformity thing. So basically, let's put it like this. If there's a 4-1 ratio here, and I test positive over here in the UK, and I'm 5-1, that means, according to New York and Nevada, I'm not positive. So then, you know, do I get banned? If I get banned in the UK, can I get a license in New York and Nevada because they don't consider me as being positive? It gets ridiculous. It really does. There's no uniformity in sanctions. There's no uniformity in the actual rules. So that means that a guy who's using testosterone in Nevada or New York, if he comes in at 5-1. You know, and I get a fight with him. Basically, he's using testosterone, but he's not going to test positive. But yeah, if he comes here to the UK or any other state for that matter, then it's different. I don't understand. And of course, it's a license for you to, because even a 4-1 has been proven to be not that sufficient. People can still use low dosages and get away with the 4-1 ratios, and this is why they brought it down from 6-1 to 4-1.
They did a study over 20 years looking at the 6-1 ratio. I think it was WADA did the study, and they found that most athletes were coming in at like 5.8. They were all gaming it. They all knew how to beat it, you know. And I imagine there's a lot of guys coming in. Like Lamont Peterson's, you know, I'm not saying he was cheating purposely, but his PE ratio when he got caught was 3.7-1 in a place where, you know, it would be, you know, it was just under the 4-1. So it's like you and I talked about with regulation. Do we legalize it and regulate it, or have we already done that in a sense?
Well, you see, this is what I think we talked about this earlier, and I think Charlie Francis, who was Ben Johnson's coach, called for this years ago when he wrote his book Speed Trap. He said basically, look, the anti-doping agencies are pursuing anti-doping because of two things. One, the unfairness of it all, and two, the athlete's health. Now, the unfairness issue is silly because you've got athletes who have more money than other athletes, therefore can afford better training, better food, better nutrition, better coaches, warm weather training. So why is it that unfairness is okay, but then someone taking a substance which doesn't cost very much, which means that all athletes will be able to have access to it, that unfairness is not okay. So the fairness issue is there's no point in trying to bring that up because there's inherent unfairness in sport. Some people have better genetics than each other. You're not going to stop that. Well, so at what point do you say unfairness, you know, is okay? This unfairness is okay, but that unfairness isn't. It's silly. And then the second issue is the medical issue, saying that it's not safe. There's been numerous studies done on anabolic steroids anyway, and to show that used with a doctor's supervision, as they are when they are used in medicine, that they cause very little problems. There's been many, many, many studies done. Quite recently, a few years ago, there was a study done on testosterone in which they were given quite large doses for 20 weeks. And they proved that, you know, there's really not many side effects, no life-threatening side effects, no, you know, very, very minor, like acne and water retention. That was the only two side effects that they got. So on that issue, it's, you know, I mean, these anabolic steroids, for instance, are less dangerous than, say, Tylenol. You know, if I was to put a bottle of 100 Tylenol and 100 of, say, Dianabol, which is an anabolic steroid, and I say, which one would you take a whole bottle of, and you know will not kill you on the spot, anyone in the know will go for the anabolic steroid. So, you know, when you look at these issues, when you look at those two issues, as Charlie Francis said, they can't really argue it. And what Charlie Francis proposed was that legalize everything. So everyone has access to everything, which then takes the unfairness issue out of it because everyone has access to it.
Right, and everybody is on the same playing field.
Right, then it's the same playing field. And then what you do is you get periodically get these athletes tested for their health, their health markers, so their cholesterol, their, I don't know, their blood pressure, things like that. And if they're at an unhealthy level, then you ban them.
But let me ask you this, though. Wouldn't that get out of hand, though? I mean, because I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there are high school kids that are putting, you know, some doping in their body to help them out in their athleticism. What if that starts bleeding into the athletes of the kids? I mean, you know what I mean? To me, it's like giving everybody in the world a loaded gun and say, well, we're on the playing field, you know, shoot each other if there's a problem. And it just kind of leaks into the system of our kids. I mean, is that a really good idea?
The thing is, right, you say that, but the kids are already using it. So it obviously shows that what we're doing now is not working.
Yeah.
So the kids are already using it. So that argument is mute because the kids are already doing it. So if you then say, right, we will legalize this but regulate it, this takes the black market dealers out of it. So then the kids have to go to the chemist, to the pharmacist to get these things. And obviously, being a kid, they ain't going to get it.
Right.
So therefore, it actually lessens the chance of these kids getting this stuff because then it gets out of the black market dealers' hands.
You said at 15, it was a guy, the same guy that said, why are you going after these guys? Everybody's doing it. He said he had a friend that was a high school wrestler that's now an MMA guy. His coach was giving the kids Dianabol at a pizza party to celebrate, and they were sprinkling it on their pizzas and eating it at age 15. That's how in
the world. See, that's wrong. I mean, that's wrong. That's wrong. I mean, giving it to kids, giving it to anyone that's not an adult is wrong. It's you know, that's abuse. That is wrong. They're still growing. That is wrong. You know, once someone's an adult and they can make their own decisions, their own informed decisions, that's different. But giving it to kids, I do not agree with that whatsoever. And that's why I think what Charlie Francis proposed all those years ago,
uh-huh,
I think is the only way forward. Because the thing is, even with more stringent testing, you can have the most stringent tests in the world. It will not eliminate doping. And I'll tell you why. Because, as the Balco Labs scandal proved, athletes with enough money can hire chemists to make designer drugs for them, which will not show up in any tests. Marianne Jones got away with it for years because she was tested many times, but because it was a designer steroid, she got away with it. Same as Dwayne Chambers. He was on the THG as well. In fact, Shane Mosley was on that stuff as well. So if you have enough money, you don't have to worry about ever testing positive because you can just hire your own chemist to make up your own steroid and you'll never test positive again. You know, I, as a pharmaceutical chemist, I know that there's literally hundreds of modifications you can make to the testosterone molecule to make a new anabolic steroid. Now, some of these modifications won't be so good, but out of the hundreds, you will get some that are good. And this has been happening since the 80s. It's, you know, it's the reason why a lot of the track and field stars were able to get away with a lot of things. You know, designer steroids is not a new thing, although people like to portray it as being new. It's just that more people have more money and more access to chemists now to be able to do that for them. So, you know, even if you have the most stringent testing in the world, I mean, like, for instance, Dwayne Chambers only got caught with THG because I think it was Trevor Graham got hold of a vial of THG that they were using and sent it into the testers and said, look, this is what these guys are using. And they developed a test for it. So even with the most stringent, and this is what people need to understand, and I don't think people will understand it, but even with the most stringent testing in the world, you will not catch the guys with the money because they can get stuff made for them which will not show up in any tests. And I'm pretty sure that's been going on for years. And this is why a lot of, I won't mention any names, but a lot of athletes have got away with mad performances for years because of this issue. And this is why I think, basically, to tell you the truth, anti-doping in general is just to keep people in jobs. Because it cannot be effective. It cannot be effective. And it's going to be hard for people to hear this. It's very hard for people to hear this. But it is the facts of life.
Right.
Whether you like it or not, that is the facts of life. Now, you can either say, you can either make a choice. You can either say, okay, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. And, you know, and you can see, I'm not just saying that, but you can see the examples of it. Like I've mentioned, Balco Labs, you can see these examples. If you talk to people like Vinter Conti, he will tell you these things. You know, it's not hearsay.
He's been on here. He's a regular guest here on Leaving in the Ring. And,
you know, it's fact. He was involved with designer steroids. So he will tell you what I'm saying is fact. So, and that was just one chemist. So, how many other athletes now have their own chemists that are making up stuff for them that they know can't be tested for? You know, that's what people need to understand.
Let me ask you this question, because I asked, you know, if anybody has questions on Twitter, please let us know. And one guy said, do you feel that the commissions and sanctioning bodies look out for certain fighters that are suspect PED abusers? You kind of just answered that. But if you want to answer that. But the other question is, today the BBB, the British Boxing Commission, Robert Smith today said on Sky Sports that they have done 190 drug tests in the last 18 months. Do you believe that? I know, it's a tough one. You don't have to answer it if you don't want to.
How many do they say they don't?
190 in 18 months.
I don't believe that. Mm. Because knowing that they only test at British title level upwards and very rarely at other non-title fights, we've had barely 50 British title fights in the last 6 months. It was 6 months, yeah?
Yeah, he said 190 in the last 18 months.
Oh, 18 months. Sorry, I'm sorry. Okay. I could accept that. Sorry. I could accept that. That's probably correct. But again, they were all competition tests. The only reason why I was caught in competition was because I got complacent. I'll be honest with you. If I wasn't complacent with my protocol, they never would have caught me. It's as simple as that. So, you know, I'm guessing that very few of these tests were out of competition tests.
Probably none.
I bet most of them was competition on the day tests, which people know, right, I'll come off my stuff a few weeks before and I'll test clean. I got complacent because of the fact that I knew I wasn't being tested. And I told the authorities that as well. That's the only reason why they caught me, because I was complacent. So, you know, there needs to be more random competition tests if catching people is the goal.
I think I agree with you 100%. at a competition is the way to go, because most guys don't really juice during the camp, where you taper off to a point, or you like you said, your protocols are safer during that period of time. Alistair Overeem of the UFC was caught at a competition. Nevada is actually, as slow a grind as they do with the testing, they actually do, they're kind of on the edge, in my opinion, kind of pushing things. And they started doing out-of-competition testing around the time Manny and Floyd were talking about fighting. And that's when he caught Alistair Overeem. He was like 20-1 with the TE ratio. He was just out of control. But I'm curious, Amir Khan told me when he was in town, and I'm not getting into naming names, but I was just curious because I'd never heard this before, that he said that the British Boxing Board, they randomly test him like all year round, and that they've even, wherever he is, if he's training in L.A., they come out here and collect samples. And he's been doing this for a long time. Have you ever heard of that? I'd never heard of that.
Well, I actually know Amir quite well, and I've been in camp with him a couple of times in L.A. And I have to say, I'm not saying he's not... I have no idea if that's true or not, but I have to say the last couple of camps that he had where I was with him, I have not seen that happen. So I'm not saying it's not true, but at the same time, I've been with him for a few weeks in camp in the wild card, and I've not seen any of those guys. Maybe they're coming to his house. That could be, because I know Amir Khan, and I know he's a very truthful guy, so I'm putting that out there straight away. He's very truthful. So if he says they did, then they probably did. But I didn't see them in the gym, so they probably came to him at his house. So that's a possibility.
It wasn't specific to him. I just want to be clear. I'm not accusing him. And I've known Amir since he came over here after the Brady Prescott loss, and he's always been a very straight shooter with me. He's never struck me as a guy that. He's never avoided a question of mine, in his eyes, like he did his body language test. He just never seems dishonest. But I was just curious, how a commission would be able to pay for that, to send a guy over. I guess it was part of his keeping his boxing license in England, even when he was fighting over here. That's part of their process.
Possibly.
I was just curious, if you'd heard that. We could probably keep you here forever this is PEDs and boxing is a passion of both mine and Dave's, and we got a million questions for you, but we've kept you on here for like an hour, and we kind of want to save something for another time. But I really thank you so much, Larry, for coming on and sharing this with us. And I do hope that you join us on Twitter. There's two things you should know about Twitter. It's a brutal world out there, but there's this wonderful feature when people yell at you and say things that are really called block. And I use it often, and I suggest using it as much as you can for people that, I think your story is about people should be open and honest with you and look at you as somebody like a Victor Conte, who's been on both sides of it and now wants to kind of share and open people's minds. I don't think they're ready to hear it, but I think that you should tell them anyways. I welcome you to all this that's going on, and I hope we have many more conversations.
Yeah, and just keep moving forward too, Larry. Like I said, regardless of the situation, we're just really happy to speak to you. And we definitely want to have you on again regularly here on the show, because it's an awareness that our sport, just like in all sports, that we need to put it out there, regardless that there's some folks that are saying that it's you're beating a dead horse. Well, obviously this horse has a lot of race in it still.
Yeah, I think so. This is not a dead horse. It's actually kind of a bucking bronco.
Let me just ask one more question, Gabe. Larry, before I let you go, 4 years, with the 4 years banned from the sport of boxing, what do you do that to make a living? Have you thought about that? Are you going to weigh out that 4 years and then get back into boxing? Or do you look for another road to a career? Larry?
Did we lose him?
I think we did.
No.
Let me see if I can... What the hell?
Did you mute him?
No, I think he hung up. I think he thought we were done.
Well, you know what? He was on his cell, so maybe his cell died.
Okay.
Well,
so
we were at the wrap anyways, and we'd like to get him back on. We'll get him back on. I got to say to the people listening live right now and following us on Twitter, thank you for all the support. Out of all the people, there's a lot of people. I don't know about your Twitter feed, Dave, but mine's kind of blowing up. Everybody's been very positive, very wide open, very listening, you know, just listening with an open mind. I had one guy be kind of rude. He's like, if he's not going to name names and don't say anything, get out of here. You're negative. Bye. You're blocked. Everybody else, you know, I really appreciate
it. That is
it.
So stupid. If you're not going to name names, get out of here. I mean, how the guy's been, he's been an all-time class. You know what I mean? I mean, he got caught. He took the punishment. He wasn't a rat. You know what I mean? He wasn't a rat.
Yeah.
He didn't go Jose Canseco on us. What he did is he took the punishment like a man. He got himself in that situation, and rather than taking the whole clan with him, he said, you know what? They're going to use me as an example, so be it, and I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
I have more respect for that. You know, I mean, okay, yeah, you know what? He was putting over 13 banded substance in him. Yes, that's absolutely true. But here's the thing is that he was upfront and he was honest about it. You know, and he also, he let the officials know what was going on, how he was doing this and how long he's been doing this. You know, there was like, he didn't leave any windows closed, any doors closed. He made sure that you're standing in front of my house on my lawn. You might as well come in and let me tell you the rest of the story.
Yeah,
and
wow.
I respect that.
I'll definitely be, I'm sure you will too, Dave. We'll be transcribing that one in forever because it was an hour-long interview. But
absolutely.
We'll be putting that on leaveitintheringradio.com and maxboxing.com. I think it's, those are kind of legacy pieces. I mean, somebody like that, to me, I mean, you know, we're not 60 Minutes, but it reminded me of when Victor Conte went on 60 Minutes and went out there and just said, hey, this is the truth. And you guys don't want to hear it, but this is the truth. Sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you're watching isn't exactly what you're watching. And he also kind of, I mean, it, what's weird about it is he did, you know, and we'll get to boxing here in a second. We'll wrap this up, but It does open that question. I remember when I first started writing about PEDs and talking to Mark Goodman specifically and Victor, I said to both of them, what about legalizing and regulating? We asked him that on this show. I think it's an interesting question, what he brought up. You're doing it anyway, so you might have, this prohibition
right.
actually work. It kind of doesn't. So I don't know. It's a lot of food for thought, a lot to take in. But let me take a caller so you and I can take a breather from speaking for a minute.
Absolutely. You know, and just to clear up the air, too, about the Nike thing I was saying, I wasn't implying anything. I know some people have some thoughts out there, and I've been hit up already on Facebook and on direct message and on, you know, on email and saying, you know, you don't want a lawsuit. I was just merely saying that, you know, there's athletes out there, they want to get to that pinnacle of their career where they can get their face on billboards and accept that. Maybe I should have said it that way, worded it that way and stuff, you know, but I'm not implying that people that are out there already that are doing it, even though I have said that right now in this stage of our sport, athletes that don't want to take a test, athletes that are afraid to take this test, should be under suspicion. And there's perfect reasoning behind it. Perfect reasoning behind it. You know? And I can care less if people think that this is a dead horse. You know? I mean, it's not a dead horse. Like I said earlier, this is a horse that has a lot of run in them. This is a horse that is continuously running laps around our sport and has open eyed fear in promoters and other people that are involved in the business of boxing. If that was not the case, why is there so much people paranoid about this? Why are people that supposedly care for the sport and want to fix the sport and make this sport the glorified sport it was at one time, why are they so afraid to talk about this? Why are they so afraid to pick up, to open that lid, open that cookie jar lid, and see what's in there, to really see what's in there. And I can give you the answer, you know? It all boils down to credentials. It all boils down to money. It all boils down to, well, I don't want to lose what's in my wallet. So I'd rather just turn the cheek.
Yeah.
And to me, you're not doing your job. Our job is to protect these fighters. Our job is to point out the garbage and the rot. If there's cancer, what do? You cut it out. And that's what we're doing here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. If you want to call in, you certainly can. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gable Montoya. You have to get past the man, Mr. David Chen, who is a host of The Boxing Fix, which is every Sunday night at 5 Pacific Time, 8 Eastern Time. Don't forget about Noche de Boxeo, which is at 5 Pacific Time, 8 Eastern Time on Monday nights. Call in 347-215-7598. So let's patch in some fight fans here, man. I want to talk about the past and the future of our blue-collar sport, boxing. Let's go with CT. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great, man.
Doing great, brother.
All right. I just have a question. Knowing, you know, Bradley won against Pacquiao, has he, I'm not sure, has he even been on a late night television show yet?
Late night television show? No. No.
No, I don't think so.
He's not being treated like a champion still.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know how old you are. I remember the days when, like, Hagler was on, you know, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Right.
You know, and then, like, we don't really – I think, you know, people have made a big deal about Pacquiao being on, like, Jimmy Kimmel, like, regularly. We don't really treat the guys like that too much anymore. It is kind of a shame.
Yeah.
Tim has definitely not been treated like a champion, you know, and I think that speaks to how the fight went and everybody went crazy and –
Unfortunately,
you know,
for Tim, calling himself the Desert Storm, right now he's in a sandstorm. And I think he's pretty much just camping out and waiting for the sandstorm to kind of, you know, settle down and clear up a little bit. And he's looking for sunnier days. So, I have spoken to his people. I'm not going to get into that because I did talk to them and said that, you know, I'm not going to talk about what we have discussed. But, you know, soon we'll have Timmy and his trainer on here on Leaving the Ring, and then we can get down to the nitty gritty of what's really going on. And you know, because like I said, no agenda at all. I thought from the beginning, yeah, I thought he lost, and I thought he lost with a large margin. But like I said, with emotions and things are behind it, you know, you go back and watch it for the second time. Yeah, and I went back a second time. And I watched it, and I was like, you know what? This was a lot closer than people were screaming about. And stuck my guns to it. But
you know what's interesting to me is we've talked about this before with fighters. Like, you know when you lose, and you know when you win. I mean, it's just – you just know. It's like playing war when you were a kid. You know if somebody shot you or if you're lying and saying, no, you didn't. And with Tim – watching that fight, I've watched it a bunch of times now, and I'm not going to do like a round by round analysis like that. But you know, I watched each round individually. I scored each round individually. I've had a few different scores, and I think at this point to really score something that we already know the outcome and all that is just kind of not very scientific. But just looking at it as a fight, I can see why Tim feels like he didn't get beat, and because he got the decision, therefore he feels as if he won. If that makes sense. I don't feel like Pacquiao dominated him long enough that it's like, wow, you know, I got my ass kicked. Oh, they gave me the decision. Cool. You know, I don't think it's like that. He felt like he was competitive every step of the way. In my opinion, he was. And the judges saw it that way. They didn't score just the big, big shots. And a lot of them missed. A lot of ones that Jim Lampley called missed, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not ashamed to say that. I'm afraid to say that. He on that video that everybody has watched, people have a lot of opinions about it. It doesn't change the way you should score the fight because you're just looking at it from Tim Bradley's point of view. Look at these things that Bradley was doing. What it does eliminate is how whooped up the crowd was. And I noticed that there, every time Pacquiao did anything, they went crazy. And you watch the video, and he missed a lot. And Jim says, oh, that landed, and that didn't land.
I love Jim's commentary on that one. Another big laugh.
Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
At one point,
I wonder if that is programmed. And Jim Lampley, like, are we going to find out that this guy was actually just a robot and he had a broken record in him, you know, where he starts going, another great left. And, Jim, we're in between rounds. My bad.
Hey, did Chavez Jr. actually give it a urine sample that night? I'm not even sure.
Well, and I got to be honest, you know, just a disclaimer that I've actually called one fight in my life. It was from the show New York Goes to Work. Steve and I did it as a reality show. We were commentators, and she was boxing. It's not a hard job. It's not an easy job. So, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I would do a better job than Jim or they got fired. I just think that's all silly. Jim's been doing this a long time. Hey, you miss him sometimes. You get caught up in the moment, and I'm not sure his job is to be a judge. But as far as your question about the piss test. With Chavez Jr., I think Jeffrey Chiani, I think that's how you pronounce his name, from East Side Boxing, he wrote a really nice piece today. It's on eastsideboxing.com. I've tweeted it on my timeline, and he talks about, and it's on my Facebook as well, if you follow me on either of those places, you can find it. He wrote a really nice piece detailing it. He did a lot more work than the majors did, which is just they just called up people and said, did he take a test? Oh, he did? Oh, okay, cool. I'll print that. And I did my work. Now, Jeffrey got, like, eyewitness account from one of Manny Stewart's, his chief second, who watched things go on in that dressing room. And the thing he didn't really see is whether or not Chavez actually gave a sample. There was a bunch of people in there when he was giving the sample, which is not – according to the World Anti-Doping Association or Agency rules, it should just be like a WADA-accredited doping control officer there getting the sample, staring right at Chavez Jr., taking that piss into the cup, your pants around your ankles, you're facing the guy. It's embarrassing. It sucks. It's a invasion of privacy, but it's the way it is. And
yeah.
It doesn't sound like that's what happened. Sounds like there was a lot of people in that room. That could be anybody's sample.
Oh, wow.
You know? So...
Yeah. All right, let's like talk about one more other thing. I thought the fight that night went most likely the way, you know, I thought it was gonna go. I just saw, like, you know, Suez Chavez seen that, you know, Andy Lee couldn't hurt him. He just went in for the kill, and thought he fought a pretty good fight. I thought Andy Lee should have created more space, but he kind of, you know, his legs, it seemed to me like his legs just got, you know, locked. He kind of got stuck, and Chavez did a good job of cutting him off and stuff, but I think if Chavez fights that way against Martinez, I think he's going to lose. I definitely don't see him coming behind a jab. He doesn't move his head very well. He just comes straight ahead, and he kind of squats down. And I think
his head really well, to tell you the truth, man. I you know what I mean, CT? I thought his head movement was going underneath. You know, he was rolling. You know, he was rolling his head at the U shape, which that's like boxing 101. It's the first thing they kind of teach you, the jab, and then how to slip punches. And he was using just basic boxing movements. Now, whether or not it's going to work with Martinez, who has a quicker jab, who can time him a lot better, because Andy Lee, I think you're absolutely right. I think that first round, Andy Lee was defeated already. You know, he tried to bang with him, and he realized, I'm with a much bigger man here, and I'm giving him the best shots that I can land, and it's not affecting him. And when that kind of happens, when you feel that you can't make you're not going to make a chip out of this boulder, you're not going to get a dent on this iron, you kind of just give up. You're there, but you're gone already. You know what I mean? I mean, you're physically there, but you could see the invisible tracks out of the ring and back in the locker room and saying, what the, you know, what happened here? So I like Julio. I like what I've seen of Julio. But I'm not going to be all like, well, you know, this is it. He's going to, you know, he's at that moment. He could do this and pull this off. Because we're talking about different leagues of athletes here. We're talking about a different type of bred fighter in Sergio Martinez. This is a guy that peaked at age of 35. Granted, though, that Julio does have the style to beat a Martinez, because I come forward in your face, put a large amount of pressure on Martinez. We've seen him fold. We've seen him kind of be uncomfortable. Martinez, to me, is a guy that needs rhythm. He needs the music. He needs that music to be able to have the tapping shoes on. He needs that music to be able to ballet in the ring. Take that music away from him, and guess what? You have a panic Martinez. You have a Martinez that just doesn't believe in himself because he has no more rhythm.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think will make it very interesting because of the fact that you point out, you know, I agree with you. He brings a lot of pressure. He's very strong. I think that'll give Martinez a little bit of trouble. The thing is, I think, you know, as the rounds go on, and I think it seems to me like Chavez likes to take punches. You know what I mean? He seems like the type of guy. He comes forward, he moves his head like you were saying, but it seems to me like he likes to feel those punches. And like Roy Jones was pointing out in the fight, you know, he can't take too many of those punches. And I think, you know, Martinez has that accuracy and some pop to his punch and speed. And he just doesn't stand in one spot like, Lee was kind of doing in there trying to, you know, trade punches with him. I think Martinez, like you said, is a lot more advanced fighter. He's very special in the ring. And I think Chavez Jr., you know, a little bit too much bravado, try to see what he can take from Martinez and end up paying price later on.
You know, we all question. I mean, we all have done it more than once. I have absolutely have done it more than once, questioning the heart of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., his heart, to see where it's at, you know. Obviously, he does like to flirt with disaster. His face definitely likes to flirt with that. Could Martinez be his father's nemesis, who he had to test himself against, which was Taylor? Absolutely. You know, he's got a guy. Junior's having a guy that can punch, who's got speed. But here's the difference, though. Taylor was not yet an established champion. Didn't know how to adjust. He listened to his corner, but there was more bravo in him rather than the intelligence of going, okay, I've done enough. I need to get out. That's where Chavez is going to have to challenge himself. He can't just have heart. He's going to have some intelligence to find out, you know what? I might have to cut the ring. I might have to lose a little bit more head movement. And I might not be able to be so brave and do the, you know, chicken wobble with my butt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in front of this guy. Because if anything, Martinez does have a straight right that can pluck you. Definitely pluck you, brother. Hey, CT, I'm going to put you on hold. We got to patch in some other fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Thank you for the call, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we are going to talk a little bit about Ortiz and Lopez here on Leaving the Ring, among other good fights that are happening on this weekend. Let's patch in another fight fan. It's been on hold for about 30 minutes, you know, and we always appreciate that when you're on hold waiting to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Avery wants to talk Pacquiao Bradley. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
How you doing? I'm gonna keep this short because I got another question after Pacquiao Bradley thing. I watched the fight. I still had Pacquiao winning, but it wasn't as dominant as I thought it was. I mean, Pacquiao missed. His straight left wasn't as effective, and Bradley's his evasiveness and his defense was actually pretty good. And I was kind of surprised at that. And after that, I want to ask a question. If Chavez beats Martinez convincingly, what do you think they're going to do with him? Do you think they're going to actually put him in meaningful title fights, or do you think they're going to keep, you know, have him fight these BS fights?
It'll be a bit of both, I think. You know,
yeah.
I mean, everybody kind of fights a bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'll mix it in, and you know, they'll like satisfy, all the guys that love Sergio and have been demanding this fight for so long. You know, I think it'll satisfy them, and they can kind of go and do something else. Maybe they build towards a Kelly Pavlik versus Chavez Jr. fight, which I think would be a pretty fun fight. But here's the thing, you know, like looking at that fight, you know, I was kind of just listening to the last caller and Dave talk about it. When Bruce Trampler and Brad Goodman, the matchmakers for Top Rank, sign off on a fight, and, you know, they look at Chavez Jr., and they didn't sign off on it until now, I'd be a little nervous if I was Sergio Martinez. He's almost 38 years old. He's got 60 fights under his belt, a lot of miles. I know he started late, but that's 60 fights. I mean, he started late, but he packed in a lot of miles into a very short period of time. I'm telling you, you know, and very few people have cheerleaded him the way I have. I'm leaning towards Chavez in this. He's bigger. He walks through big punches. You got to remember, Paul Williams was not, he was a middleweight. He was a big guy. But he wasn't an established middleweight. He didn't have any real middleweight wins other than that controversial win over, or the close win over Martinez,
yeah,
who's not a middle. And he got knocked out, yeah, but this is a giant middleweight.
Yeah.
Martinez is going to be pushed around and moved around, and he struggled in his last two fights against Darren Barker and Matthew Macklin,
exactly,
guys that took him
to
the limit. Yeah, if I was a Martinez fan, I'd be very worried, you know, and
I'm very worried. I'm a Martinez fan, and I'm very worried. I mean, at this age, I wonder, can he handle a big, strong, young guy like that? That's very worrisome.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. That's why I think a lot of us now are really liking this fight. You know, I mean, we know where the WBC's bet's at. look, I'm getting myself into trouble again. Avery, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold. We got a lot of calls. Don't hang up.
All right, thank you, brother.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. The topic tonight is Chavez Jr. versus Sergio Martinez. You know, he's been praying, he's been wishing, he's been everywhere, you know, knocking on everybody's door, asking for this fight, and guess what? He's finally getting, what he's asked for. I think he rides to that occasion. I don't know. You're absolutely right, though. 38 years old against a big, you know, I think it's safe to say that the guy was Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. looks like the stuntman for Cloverfield, you know, the big old lizard that was walking the city of New York City. let's get our next caller here. Ricardo wants to talk to upcoming fights this weekend. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
Excellent, man.
Good. I wanted to talk about one of the fights that not everybody's not too many people are paying attention to is the Efren Escovilla and Rico Ramos fight this weekend.
You know what, man? I'm very interested in that fight. I'm really interested in that fight. I think it's a good fight for Efren because Rico Ramos he fought a scare fight with Rigondeaux, got blown out with a body shot, was hurt, though, in between those rounds, that Efren right now is getting a guy that's coming in still questioning himself, you know, what happened that night? And this is a big opportunity for a Thompson fighter, which the Thompson guys have really been stepping up to play. We gotta be honest, man. I said this last time when we had Herrera on. The Thompson guys have really shown that they're built to be fighters. They may not have all the special effects. They may not have that big background, but, man, these guys work. These guys are really honestly what really makes up our blue-collar sport. These are blue-collar fighters that put in all that extra work, all that extra, you know, oomph to make it to where they need to be, and they're grateful about it. So this is a great opportunity for Efren. I tell you, if Rico Ramos comes in with a light of doubt, Efren's all over it. But Efren's been hurt before, too. So if he doesn't, he's going to have problems with a Rico Ramos that, if it doesn't phase him, which I highly doubt, it had to have phased him with the Rigondeaux fight. If it doesn't, though, hypothetically, if it doesn't, Efren's in for a long night.
Right, right. And I want to see what Gerber thinks about it.
I've been looking at this fight a bit. I've never been big on Rico Ramos. I think he's got a lot of defensive issues. He's got decent power. I really am a big believer in Thompson boxing and in particular their matchmaker, Alex Kampanova. And I think he's the bomb. And he's really good about taking calculated risks. I almost thought, you know, when Golden Boy ripped my credential for this or didn't give it to me, I almost thought about going over to the Sports Lodge and watching this because I think it's going to be a fun night at the fight. But I'm actually going to go with Esquivas. I would mispronounce his last name, but Efren. I'm going to go with him.
I'm going with Efren, too.
I think that Alex is a smart guy, and if he's taking this risk with Rico Ramos is coming off a knockout loss and a terrible performance, and really two terrible performances in a row, he got really lucky landing that knockout punch from nowhere. That was, if ever there was a lucky punch, it was that one. I like Efren a lot, and I'm going to go with him on this one. I think it'll be fun.
You know what? When they announced it, and they were setting that fight up. I thought that was the perfect move for them for Efron, because this is a kid who's hungry. He's been wanting to get that taste of exposure. He's getting that major chance, you know. And Efron is one of those rugged, tough, come forward, he's got boxing skills. He could do a lot of good things in that ring. And with Rico Ramos, I'm glad that you mentioned the bad performances, but even when he was an ultra high, where a lot of fans were really high on that kid, when he fought Alejandro Perez, Alacran, he had problems with a guy that was smaller, come forward, and try to bang with him, where Efron's a big kid. He's a big guy. You know, he's not Alejandro. He's not small. You know, he packs a decent punch. He can come forward. He can, you know, travel back. He could do things in the ring that, to me, Rico Ramos may just kind of revert back to being an amateur fighter. You know, he might get on that bicycle. And that's why I say, if he does, it's going to be a long night. But if he goes in there in questioning what happened to him with Rigondeaux, it could be a short night for Rico Ramos. Because
I think it's
going to be a great fight. Yeah, it's going to be a good fight. Either way, and a great fight and a great way for Efren to kind of step up, because it's time for him to take that leap, definitely.
Exactly. And I wanted to just touch on one thing about the Chavez-Martinez fight. I think Sergio has a great chance of beating Chavez. But, I mean, the only thing that I'm worried about is that he's going to want to stand there and trade with him. And that's going to be his downfall if he does that. And I think he's going to do that because he has so much, I don't know, animosity towards him that he's going to want to prove, if not to everybody, to himself, that he can beat this guy, that he's not all that everybody says he is. And he's going to want to stand there and trade with him. And I think that's going to hurt him if he does that. But he can box him all day, all night, and beat him to the punch and beat him down. But if he stands there and trades with them, I think that's going to really hurt him in the end.
If he looks for the knockout and because he's worried about the cards, you're absolutely right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's gonna want to prove something to himself and say, you know what, I can beat this guy. He's not all that, and stand there and trade. And all it takes is one big shot. And we know Chavez can take a punch. And if he can land a big right hand, a big left hand, it's gonna be a hard fight. It's gonna be a really hard fight.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Man.
I can't wait. I don't think it's actually going to happen, but we can't wait to see it.
Yeah, definitely.
I know, man. Hey, Ricardo, hey, thanks for calling in, man. I appreciate it. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right, sounds good.
There you go, fight fans. You want to call in? Let's talk some boxing here on Leave It in the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host Gabriel Montoya, man behind the switchboard, our producer, Mr. David Chin. Pick up your June issue of Undisputed Magazine. You got James Rick Howard, the coach, the man that tried to stop the match on ESPN against Kareem Mayfield and Raymond Serrano. He's on the front cover, and we have a story on him. He's a feature story for that magazine. We got a lot of good content in the magazine. So go ahead and pick it up. It's only $1.99. Make sure you tune into our sister stations, which is The Boxing Fix. It's a Blitz boxing radio show. It's always on the go. It's nonstop. They talk about all the undercard fights that have just passed and the upcoming ones. That's every Sunday night, 5 Pacific and 8 Pacific time. Let me know what you guys think about that show. Also, Noche de Boxeo, if you're Spanish speaking, and myself or Gabriel, we speak too fast for you. You can always tune in to Noche de Boxeo. It's our sister station. It's in all in Spanish. So for the people that always email me and go, hey, you know, I was downloading Leaving a Ring, and you guys are speaking in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. Gabriel don't speak Spanish, but the guys at Noche de Boxeo does. So just to give you a heads up, that's every Monday night, 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, Monday night, Noche de Boxeo. So anyways, man, we've got some great fights coming up this weekend, Gabe. Victor Ortiz and Josecito Lopez. Big step up for Josecito Lopez. You know, this is a kid that's been waiting for his time, his position. Another Thompson fighter that's been fighting through the rankings is going to get a shot on the big stage against a southpaw that has, you know, has always had some questions looming around the poor guy, but packs a big punch, but has meltdowns in the ring. I don't know.
It's going to be – I'm going to pull up the old schedule here so we can kind of go down it. What a weird show. 36-44. Can you believe that?
I know.
Larry actually just contacted me. He just was he's been hitting me on Facebook here. He said it to the phone for whatever reason it cut out, but he wanted to thank us. And he was surprised that we actually talked for an hour, but we both agree that we can both talk about PEDs for hours. You know what surprised me, and he mentioned this, was that he has a degree in pharmaceutical chemistry. It's like, wow, talk about – it was just an education. But anyways, here's the schedule. I guess we could just go right into the you asked me about the fights this weekend, Ortiz and Lopez. I think it's – for one, I'm excited to watch it from the fans' perspective once again and just sit in the stands and kind of like, you know, have a beer and actually enjoy the fights. But – I found it kind of, not rude is not the right word, but presumptuous that they would already set Victor Ortiz against Saul Alvarez. And as much as guys say, I can't look forward. That's funny. They're looking forward. How could you not look forward? And
Not even that. It's almost like a slap in the viewers' faces, the fans' faces, because it's basically like, yeah, you guys are paying to come and see a fight that we really kind of really, you know, this shouldn't be a match for Victor. This is already a win-win for Victor. So what's the point of you coming out when you already know he's going to be facing Canelo? To me, where's the anticipating? I can't anticipate anything. You've kind of stole that away from me.
Well, it would be very interesting if tomorrow night, if it's a close fight, or Saturday night, rather, if it's a close fight at Staples, and one of the cards reads, you know, like 119, you know, like when a dude just doesn't have a chance at all, then you kind of have to wonder about California. Because California, you know, a lot of people have been, you know, focused in on the bad scoring for Pacquiao and Bradley. Obviously, I live in PED land and been writing about that. People have kind of missed, and again, this is a writer that I point out because he's in another sport. He covers MMA. It's a site called FightOpinion.com. His name is Zach Arnold. And for one, if you want a really great education on testosterone replacement therapy in combat sports, he's the guy to go to. But he's been covering all the stuff that's been going on in California. And there's a big meeting next week in El Monte that I'm going to be covering. And the head of the California State Athletic Commission might be out. A lot of things are going on. They're out of money in the budget. There's apparently sort of overspending. It's a very large issue. We could spend a whole hour or a whole show on it alone. But
yeah,
they
booked their referees or officials. I mean, I don't even know if we should even get into that. I mean, a lot of people don't even know this, but they'll get a referee on the lower budget cards. You know, fights, they won't get a referee that's local. They'll pick them up that's all the way in Nevada and drive them all, I mean, fly them down or drive them down and put them in one of the best hotels, which is ludicrous. I mean, we've spoken to people that have been in the business, and I've spoken to refs and go, I think it's dumb. You know, I live here. Why am I not giving – why economically is that taken away from me? I don't know. They can answer that. You know?
Well, I've got, you know, it was weird. Before I even, you know, I was starting to get into the PED thing, but I hadn't really, really started to release a lot of stuff. And this is like last year, like early last year. I'm like dusting off my notes, although Zach has just been just killing it all over the story. But that was one of the things that a source gave me was that there was a lot of nepotism going on, but that was one of the scams was if there was a fight in San Diego, one of the higher ups in the CSAC, and he was having his second inter office romance, which is kind of not really again by the rules.
Right.
And he basically made her an inspector, according to this source, and they went down and they would handle the fights in like San Diego, and they were living up in I think Sacramento, so they would head all the way down there. Cover the fights, they would work them, they would get paid by the state, and they would charge all the travel budget to the state, but they'd basically have a paid weekend. And that's how we don't have any money left in our budget, or at least one of the many ways that this source alleges that we don't have any money in our budget. And you look at these kind of weird judging that goes on, and you do wonder, like one of the things Bob Arum said at that press conference after the Pacquiao fight was that he's like, look, I'm not saying these guys are cheating, I know these guys. I know Dwayne. I know Jerry. Well, I don't really want to be a part of a sport where the impartial judges go way back with the promoters. Kind of don't think that's right. They're supposed to be impartial. So I think there's a lot of, I think it's like a, I don't know if bloodletting is the right term, but a cleansing needs to happen in this sport. It just absolutely does. I mean, I think we get too bogged down in, we've talked about this, Dave, of, you know, let's get a million guests on the show, or, you know, let's take a picture with a fighter. Or let me
write
this fighter profile and get props for that. A lot of people have accused me of that, of like, you're just doing this PED thing to get noticed. Like, I'm not even in the BWAA right now. I'm not even eligible for any of their awards. I don't even submit my articles to that. What this is about is what Floyd started, and what everybody begs me to give him credit for, trying to clean up the sport. And if you really want to do it, as Larry said, do you really want to do it? Or do you want to look like you're doing it? Because actually doing it is going to be
like
a very,
that.
Very painful
yeah.
process. A very painful process.
A very painful and lonely, process, you know. It's not even that alone, you know. When people were, you know, screaming for this bad judging and why is nobody attacking this and getting on this, you know. Here's another one. And just to let people know, you know, we're not going to call them out because they still haven't given me an answer, but we have asked for particular people just this past week right now to be on, and I haven't gotten a response back, which is, you know, normal. It normally takes about a month sometimes to somebody to call us back if it's, you know, a figure that normally doesn't do interviews on the radio. It's there's a process of persuasion that we have to do, and we get a lot of people that go, why don't you have this guy on, and why don't you do this, and why don't you do that? Why don't you calm the F down? Let us do our job, and we'll get it. There's a thing called being patient. You know, sometimes kindness kills somebody to say, you know what, I'm going to talk to you because you have been patiently waiting, and that's what we've been doing. We have called specific people to speak to about, I'll give you a prime example. I've seen that the Boxers Promoters Association, that they now want to tackle this. They want to tackle about bad judging. They want to be able to officiate this and clean up the bad judging that's happening in our sport. Great. Fantastic. Sounds really good. Thumbs up. But let's talk a little bit more deeper in it. A press release, in my opinion, and it's, I know my partner Gable agrees with me, it's a press release. It's a few words put together and a paragraph or maybe two, because you put a little bit more thought by trying to cloud people's eyes and ears. It's not enough.
It really isn't. And I got to be honest, you know, and I don't know Joe DiGuardia. I've never talked to the man. I tried to, but he never called me back when earlier this year he allegedly, you know, according to Boxing 360, you know, Mario Iagobi, that promoter, said that they poached his fighter, Angel Hernandez, and put him on ESPN.
Remember,
under contract to that promotional company, and Joe put him in as an opponent was fine with that. That's the head of the Promoters Association kind of screwing somebody else. Never wanted to call me back. He never called me back to rectify the situation. There was a lot of weird stuff that went on. They were fighting for a belt at the time, and one of the I think it was a WBO or NABO, same organization, said, you know, I'll call you back, but I don't want to be screwed by the media, but if there's something going on here, I will get back to you. He never got back to me. So, yeah, I am kind of screwing you in the media now because you were disingenuous. So, to me, yeah, a press release, okay, and then what? And look at your track record. You screwed over one of your fellow promoters. I'm supposed to believe that you're actually going to do something about cleaning up the sport? I'm not buying it. So, I'd like to see
some action. I'm not buying it right at this moment. But I do want to know. I want to know the agenda. I want to know, you know, what really are you prepared to do? What are the real changes? You know, because we can all cry wolf, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just what it is. It's a cry. You know what I mean? I want to see the march. I want to see the steel toes and the color guard. That's what I want to see. You know, and guess what? If it sounds good and it sounds like it's promising and it can make a difference. Then give me my set of Doc Martens. I'll put them on. Let's get out there. Let's march together. A lot of fight fans, we're fed up with this. We're tired of this, man. Tired of, you know, trying to defend our sport on some BS stuff that happens that just really, we know, I know we call Gabriel the dark cloud, but man, this is just a major dark cloud on our sport. It's embarrassing. It's ridiculous. It has been happening for hundreds of years. I know that. But man, this circle's got to stop. I know we can't completely clean it up, but can we do a little house cleaning? The floors are really sticky in the arena, man. Big time.
Big time. That's, I mean, you know, I applaud Joe for coming on and saying, look, enough is enough. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying, you're a liar.
Right.
Not at all. But for me, it's like, I just remember my first experience with Joe was earlier this year when I was calling him about a situation and he never called me back. And I think, you know, not just as a promoter or a person that was involved in that story, but as the head of the Promoters Association, you would make it a point to call back.
Absolutely.
You know, especially in a situation like that. yeah, if you can't handle your own business, I'm not really putting a lot of faith in you handling the sports business. I got to be honest. Just got to be honest. You know, and I know he was like a federal judge. I mean, like, he's an honorable dude. But I'm just dealing with, you know, I deal with people on a personal basis and how you treated me. So it's kind of disingenuous. But at the same time, yeah, this sport just needs to, it's just top to bottom. I know there are certain people that really like the way the sport runs, that it, you know, it is a series of individual business transactions and that they can kind of get away with what they want to get away with because it's so fractured. I think if we look at the sport, and you know, in a worldwide view, in England it's still very, very popular. In Latin America, popular. Canada, still very big. But
absolutely.
In America, it's a sick, dying animal. And it's because we've killed any sort of trust we have with the public. And I think that at some point, you know, I know John McCain is getting involved now. He's made some legislation. I think it's just really time. I don't know if getting the government involved in anything is ever going to fix anything. But, you know, if we don't want them to step in, then we need to take care of this. You know, if we want to be our own thing, we want to be our own sport, then we need to handle our own business.
Absolutely.
We're not doing that.
We have to clean up our own backyard. That's just truth in life there. You know, this is our backyard. Let's clean it up.
Yeah.
Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Hope you guys appreciated our short rant.
Yeah.
You know, but this is why we do a 3-hour boxing show, so that we're able to let it all out. Just let it all out. And then we can enjoy a beer after the show. You know, I want to thank everybody. You know, I'm always appreciative that people that interact with us on Twitter, Facebook, email, whatever the case is, that do enjoy our show. We know we are very well aware of the people that don't enjoy our show, but still tune in just to tell us what we did wrong or what we effed up at or what you guys are talking about too much and what you need to do next, et cetera, et cetera. So, and we appreciate that too because, you know, regardless of whatever, how you're kind of, you know, sending the message, it may not be the most formal way of doing things, but it is appreciated, you know, and we do like speaking to everybody as much as we can, you know, and I try to, I've gotten better in talking to people because believe it or not, and Gabriel can tell you this and he can attest to this and a lot of people that know me personally, I'm not a people person. I'm not a guy that really likes to sit there. I'll do it for a while, and I'm cool, but I get irritated very easily. You know, it's kind of a sickness, to tell you the truth. You know what I mean? Anyways, man, let's talk about some fights here on Leaving the Ring. You love people. Yeah, you do. You could sit there, and you could just chop it up. And you've seen my face, though. I'll be like, all right, man, we got to go. I got to get out of here. But, hey, that's just, I don't know, I've always been like that. I know a lot of folks are like, what? Are you serious? I've had a lot of people tell me that. You know, like, oh, Dave, you're such a peace people person. I'm like, no, I'm not. You don't even know me. I'm not a people person. I hate everybody. Everybody that comes across me, I hate them. I just can't stand them. You know? I would be perfectly fine if I was the only man in this world right now.
So would I, but it's just not for me. For
yeah.
Different reasons.
Oh, man. Josito Lopez. You know what? I know people are counting him out. I know people are not giving this guy a shot. but I'm telling you, this is a really good fight for him. You know, Ortiz has got power. There's no denying that. And he's got power that can humble you pretty quick. And Lopez and Henry Ramirez, they definitely, there's no, there can't be a lie in saying, well, we've faced guys with punching power like that. Maybe, but we haven't seen it. We haven't really seen you take a really huge shot from a big puncher like Victor Ortiz, who can just turn the fight around with one big single punch. And he's got speed. There's nothing taken away. I think being an athlete, the athleticism that Victor Ortiz has, the viciousness this kid possesses in the boxing department, there's no denying he's got gifts. My big question is, like always, is the mind frame of a fighter. Where is he at? Does he buy into the whole, is his mind more concentrated on Canelo? Because the fact is that Golden Boy just really, they didn't even do a small leap over Josecito Lopez. They did a hurdle, you know? I mean, it's almost like Josecito Lopez slipped at the local grocery store on a spill of water on the floor. He fell flat on his back, and the store owner just steps right over him and keeps walking. Doesn't even acknowledge that the guy had an accident. That's where Josecito Lopez, to me, as a fighter from Thompson Boxing, is to Golden Boy. He just looked at him like, okay, cool. We know that Thompson fighter's coming to fight. We know that he's going to give a good outing, but I don't think he's going to beat our fighter. And you know what? Golden Boy have put himself not once, not twice, but numerous times in positions like that. When we talk about reaching for your ankles, Golden Boy has done it plenty of times.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting, you know, and it's kind of weird. I got like a random anonymous random email.
Already?
We haven't even already. Yeah. Wow. That was very interesting. I'll tell you about it off the air. It is kind of a weird risk to sit there and it's funny, like sitting back, I guess this is an issue we should talk about, is the September 15th, the dueling pay-per-views. You know, Chavez Jr. Versus Sergio Martinez at the Thomas and Mack Center, which is one of the reasons, but just them mentioning that they're doing a fight at the Thomas and Mack, otherwise known as like the Silverdome West, just says like maybe this thing isn't going to happen because it's kind of an old decrepit building. The nickname on the boxing beat is the Thomas and Crap, I think. So just because, I mean, it's not that great of a place to see a fight. The media room is actually the first place I saw a major biggest fight. But it's just kind of a funky venue. And I'm like, why are you doing it there? Why not Mandalay? Why not MGM? I guess they're booked. But, you know, then at the same time in Vegas, there are booked. Is the MGM is going to be Canelo versus Ortiz. They're going to do this on the same night. Probably going to be $50, $60 pay-per-views, somewhere in that neighborhood. So they're asking you to pay, with taxes and everything, like $120,
right,
$140 bucks that night. You know, probably more if you're getting in an HD. You know, the privilege of seeing Sergio Martinez crystal clear on HD. I know some of the women out there are already salivating at that idea. But for one, I find it interesting on a couple levels. I wrote about this today. Like Richard Schaefer went on Golden on Boxing Scene. Gee, I wonder why. And he went in and did an interview over there, and it was a compare and contrast interview. Bob Arum was saying, look, we had this date, we knew we were going to do this, but we wanted to make sure that he got, that Chavez Jr. got through Andy Lee, and then we solidified the date. But we had, you know, talked about this in like January or February, and we weren't going to announce that this fight was going to happen until this guy won. They're an old pro. That's how you do it. You do it all kind of undercover. But you do kind of, you know, look at a site and you kind of prepare, but you don't do what Golden Boy did because they're infants, or rather they're in their infancy compared to Gold or to Top Rank. They're a very
right.
young company. They went and just announced it and went crazy, and we've got the date. And if you look at those interviews side by side, Richard Schaefer's calling Bob Arum an old man, and he's bitter, and he's really unhappy. And, I mean, just like getting very personal. And
yeah,
that's
what I mean? It's an attack of his appearance. It's an attack of his appearance, and you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like you left the business suit, and you're putting on the black hat, you know? I mean,
it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and he's the one that's kind of acting very unprofessional in the whole thing.
Right.
And But just bottom line is, I'm looking at both these companies. You know, Bob is doing things the way he's always done them, and he's always used that date, September 15th, dating back to, you know, Oscar and other fighters. Golden Boy claims that that's their date and they'll be doing it for the next 50 years. But what's lost in this is a couple things. One, the fans. Two, I find it very interesting the shift that's happened this year since Golden Boy's former lawyer, Stephen Espinoza, has taken over Showtime. Everybody keeps saying, no, there's no bias. You've seen a lot of Golden Boy fighters on Showtime.
Right.
But in particular, these are two fighters in Alvarez and Ortiz that HBO spent, invested millions of dollars, lots of time,
right,
and good faith in developing, and they just went right across the street and they're going to do a Showtime pay-per-view. All that, I mean, they were built up on HBO, and Showtime gets to reap the benefits, and you kind of wonder why that is. Very interesting.
It is.
But the bottom line is the fans are just getting absolutely screwed on September 15th. Yeah, they're two good fights. It would be great if these guys could co-promote and put them all on one card. And one pay-per-view, I think everybody would compromise with Top Rank and Golden Boy and pay $75 for the pleasure of seeing both of those fights and a bunch of undercard fights on one card, as opposed to paying $140 on one night, you know, for two different pay-per-views. The more I hear these companies say we want to clean up the sport, in particular Golden Boy, who's put themselves on that platform, the more I think you're kind of liar heads. Sorry, but you don't really seem to care about the fans. You're not acting that way. So,
no.
I guess we went for rant number two.
Rant number two. Don't worry, guys. It's going to be rant number three in a few. We got to count down to that one. But let's bring up our fight schedule. Let's talk about some fights here on Leaving the Ring. Thomas Adamek also having his success over Eddie Chambers. Did you watch that fight? Let me ask you that first.
I did.
And what'd you think?
It was a close fight. I thought Eddie, he'll forget with one hand, sure fought his ass off.
Exactly. You know what though? You know what? I don't think people really give Adamek, whatever you want to call him, I don't think they give him his due on his defense, because a lot of the shots too that Eddie Chambers was throwing, especially in the beginning of the first, you know, four maybe five rounds, Adamek was able to slip him, catch him, and was really kind of matching him defense for defense. You know, and that's what made it a much closer fight than we thought it was going to, you know, kind of boil down to, you know. And Eddie Chambers, too, looked great in that fight, even though he only had one arm, supposedly. He looked good in that fight. And I also have to say, that even though they were close rounds and there was not a lot of, hold your breath moments in that fight, it still was interesting and it was fun. It was a fun fight for Saturday. And Adamek, when's the last time this guy's been in a terrible fight, man? Really?
Never. He's always been a good fight.
He's always in a good fight. And now he's talking about he's going to be back on again. I just can't think of the date right now, but it's soon. I think it's like, I think it's next month, I think they were saying, or September or something like that. I don't even remember, you know, and he's probably one of the busiest heavyweights out there right now. Small heavyweights out there, Gabe. What do you think?
They're bringing him back September 21st.
September.
Against, the dreaded TBA. What I love about, you know, I look at all these other promoters, Lou DiBella, Gary Shaw, what Steve Kim calls the television packagers.
Right.
Guys that just kind of take a license fee, and that's about it. They haven't really done anything to help the sport. They kind of take. They take TV dates. They don't really build draws. They don't really invest in promotion at all. Very little, if any. That's just, you know, what I'm observing. If you're pissed off, you can call up the show. Or you can do what you're still doing and not take my calls. That's fine, too. I don't need to talk to you. And then I look at main events and Kathy Duva and what she's done. And they're building, they've built a fan base out there, the Prudential Center. I know Adamek, and, you know, he's Polish and there's a Polish contingent there, but they've taken the time to build it. Look what they're doing on MSNBC now. Everybody loves that. You know, and I know guys are saying it's not really network. It's as network as it gets today. It's basic cable. That's awesome. They've brought it back to that level.
Exactly.
Might as well. It's the modern era's version of regular TV. They've brought that back. Lively environments, crowds that are excited about the local fighters that they're seeing. They care about that. What they've done as a small promoter has made all the other small promoters look like idiots, the people that actually are just kind of stealing from the sport as opposed to giving back to it. I absolutely love what Kathy Duva has done. I can't gush enough about her. I just want more. You know, I want them to keep doing it, and I wish other promoters would do what they're doing. Thompson Boxing is another one. That is, if you haven't been out to the Doubletree in Ontario to see a Thompson Boxing show, you're missing out.
And I haven't been to one. Haven't been to one. And it's because it's always on Friday. You know what I mean? I got so many things going on Friday. Friday's like the worst days, but I have to really make a chance to make it to one of them because they produce just some great fighters. They really know how to build them. Kathy Duva is another one that, you know, they have a formula. And this is what I like about Kathy Duva is that she's very well aware of her formula and very open to this formula. There's like no secret recipe. You know, we've had her on numerous times here on Leaving the Ring, and I think I'm quoting her correctly. There's no secret recipe on what they do and how they build their fighters. It's just a traditional way of doing it. And all the TV packers love to avoid that traditional way because it involves money and it involves time. And we live in a society and in a culture right now that we want everything done today, right now. I don't care. I mean, it even falls into right now with our athletes with the, you know, HGH and PEDs. I want to make it to that level right now. I don't want to work for it. I don't want to, you know, do the formula of building myself to get to that point. So we look for shortcuts. And I was taught, and I'm pretty sure you were taught this way, Gabriel, and I'm pretty sure a lot of listeners out there, was that shortcuts don't get you anywhere except for a place for a small time and a small frame, and then it's the end of it. You know, my dad's favorite quote to me all the time was that, you know, if I was to drop you off on top of the hill and you fell off, you wouldn't know how to get back up because you didn't climb it. You didn't hike it.
Right.
And that's what Kathy Duva, to me, they do. They climb that, even though they've been on that trail, that long trail to get up to the top, they're almost like athletes themselves. They put on their jogging shoes and they run up that trail. And that's the formula.
Well, you know, I look at like DiBella, you know, he was on the other side. He was with HBO. I think he does understand how this business works and all that. And he doesn't have the same money to throw at it that a Top Rank does or a Golden Boy does. But at the same time, I look at what Kathy's done, and I say, well, why aren't these other guys doing that? You know, why did, you know, Angulo never fight in Los Angeles? You know,
and
Box
362 are following that format. I mean, I got to give it up to them.
They're interesting to me in that, you know, and I talk with him fairly frequently because we just kind of connected when I met them for the David Estrada fight out here. And I liked his philosophy. They haven't promoted their own show. They kind of co-promote with other people or they'll drive their guys out. They are, you know, what some people would define as a TV packager, but they're also younger than all the other guys. They've only been around like less than 2 years. And what Mario's trying to build is local attractions that appeal to, you know, a multinational demographic and then start promoting. But he's like, I don't want to promote a show before I can actually do it and do it the way that I want to do it and do it correctly. I don't want to just kind of like throw it up and not have it be very good. And I respect that. But at least he's like, he acknowledges it. You know, like, look, this is the stage that I'm at right now. This is where I plan to be. But the other guys, they've been in this business a long time. I don't see anything changing. You know, the whole Heyman thing, you know, the Berto connection where, you know, I'll just be, I guess we're just all in. This is rant number three, but, I've always heard that rumor that none of these guys have any paper with any of the promoters that they're with. And these guys will sit there and get on the phone and be like, you should expose this. Well, why don't you come clean? And furthermore, why don't you stop being part of the problem? And they get real quiet. And then they stop taking your calls. And then you realize
real quick too.
that you've actually spoken the truth.
You're off the speed dial, what they would say. You're off the speed dial. But, you know, hey, we have to let it all out. And today, if it sounds really negative, well, it is. but negative in a good way, because we're about as frustrated and fed up as a lot of the listeners and fight fans out there, boxing heads. But let's get with that. Let's go on to our fight schedule. Let's do that. And because there is light in this dark place of boxing that we love and endure and tune in every weekend and read and watch. So let's do that, Gabriel. Fight fans, you want to call in and you want to talk boxing, or you want to join in on our rant, or you want to add to the rant, absolutely, you're more than welcome to here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk, 347-215-7598. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, 97 Rough, or the Dark Cloud, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, or David Chen. Get one.
All right, I had a little bit of a Dorito stuck in my throat there. All right.
Let's go with that fight schedule. Go.
June 22nd, Friday, 2012, at the Saboba Casino in San Jacinto, California. On ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Mike Dallas, 18-2-1 versus Javier Castro, 27-4. And Brandon Gonzalez, 15-0 versus Eli Bastama. And actually, this is a different venue. I don't know why my fight schedule says what it's saying. But this is actually going to be at the – oh, no, I'm right. What am I talking about? Saturday's the Sports Lodge. I kind of got ahead of myself.
Right.
Mike Dallas, 18-2-1 versus Javier Castro, 27-4. In support there, you got Brandon Flawless Gonzalez, 15-0 versus Eli Agastama, 6-4. Also on that card, Javier Molina, 10-1 versus Octavio Narvaez, 7-11-1. And Guy Robb is also on that card, 7-1 versus Leopoldo Gonzalez, 12-6-1, as well as Alejandro Luna, 9-0 versus the dreaded TBA. At the DoubleTree Hotel.
That's
Ontario,
actually a
California.
really good card. Before you kind of walk away from that, I want to talk to you a little bit about it, if you don't mind.
That's a fun little card. Yeah, we got time.
It is. It is. It's a really fun little card, you know. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong here. The kid that Brandon Gonzalez, Flawless, from Sacramento, is that the same kid that gave Donnell Livingston his first blemish on his record?
You know, it might be. Let me take a look at that real quick.
I think it is. You know, and if it is, if I'm correct, you know, because I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. That's why I call myself 97, because 97
yes,
times. There you go. See? There you go. So
very last fight on my birthday.
Which that kid who he's facing that lost to Donnell Livingston is a tough customer, you know. A guy that's been around in the sport for quite some time. And Brandon Gonzalez not looking the greatest off of his last performance with Ozzie Duran. And you can see that there was something lacking. Something that just wasn't right. I don't care what he says. He's told me, no, I was fine. But there was something there. Now, he's with Virgil Hunter, which I think is a great combination. But we've said this before, you know, just because you have a brand name or a guy that is a great trainer doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna really move on over to that particular person. It really depends if that person is able to comprehend the instructions or is able to draw out the map that is given to them by the trainer. So to me, this is a great opportunity to find out where Brandon Gonzalez is at. Because he's missed some opportunities because of promoter problems to injury that's kind of left him out of the fight game. To me, this is for a comeback fight, Gabe. I don't know. It's a little scary for me. You know, as myself, being that I'm a fan of Brandon Gonzalez, I'm not necessarily too – if I was in their position, I don't think that would have been a fight that I would have taken on as a comeback.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but you know what? Sometimes you got to risk, and I think at some point with this guy, you know, with Brandon, I think it's you know, beat these guys, or you probably should find another job. And you know, Eli Agastama, he's tougher than his record. You know,
won't
take that away from Danielle. He's tougher than his record, but you should beat him, and Brandon's going to have to beat the guy. You know, and it is kind of a make or break. It's gonna be, if you're going to be a TV fighter and you're the 15-0 guy, you better beat the 6-4 guy. if you want to continue being a TV fighter. So I think it's kind of one of those calculated risks that they're, you know, we'll see how he goes with it, you know, how he does with it.
I need a blowout. That's what I need. You know what I mean? I need an assurance that, you know, when you buy a betting horse, you need that insurance that first match that comes, I mean, that first run, he's going to run that track. He's going to circle it. And there's not going to be any injuries. There's not going to be any hesitation. There's not going to be any lack of motivation. That's what we need from Brandon Gonzalez, because the Aussie Duran fight obviously left more questions than answers for us fight fans out there, you know? So this is a tough comeback fight for Brandon Gonzalez. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. It's a step up, shut up, or go back home, you know? And that's where it's going to be left for himself. Mike Dallas Jr., I give it to the kid. He keeps you know, taking more and more, you know, risky fights out there and hasn't came on top. Most of the time, he's been falling apart. He's been falling backwards. But he's a guy that continuously challenges himself. He hasn't given up. That's what I like about Michael Dallas. He really does live up to the city name in the big state. Guy has a lot of confidence, and he sure in the hell shows it by not looking discouraged. When we talk about mental ability, I got to put Michael Dallas up there. This guy, there's no quitting him.
No, I think he's really improved working under Virgil Hunter. You know,
right.
He seems to have a real sense of who he is. They've tightened up some things like his footwork, his defense. It's kind of a series of small things that will add up, hopefully, to a really nice fighter, you know, a larger picture. I talked to him this week. I actually got a story coming out on him tonight. He needs to get a new cell phone because I couldn't hear a damn thing he was saying a lot of the time. But
yeah.
But he's a cool, you know, he's one of those guys. He's definitely a gym rat, definitely loves to work at it. And, you know, I both know Virgil very well. His brand of philosophy and mixed in with the fighting style that, he, you know, the way he kind of works old school repetition, working on specific tools, not really changing your character, discovering your character by working with you. All those things I think are going to be very beneficial. I'm looking for Mike Dallas to win handily tomorrow night. I think he's just sounded much more mature. He understands who he is as a fighter now. He understands what he has to do, and he trusts the people around him, particularly Hunter, to game plan for him and guide him home. So I think it's going to be good. I'm really curious how Javier Molina is going to bounce back from his first loss. You know, will he be able to learn from it? You know, physically, I kind of wonder about him in terms of his strength as a fighter. He's still a young guy. And to put him in with Artemio Reyes, that was a tough fight for him.
Well, this is his second comeback fight because he did win
his
last
comeback.
One.
Yeah. So I think they've stepped it up a little bit more. A guy that's 7-11, he's got a lot of fights. He's got a lot of experience. But I want to see him come all the way back. I think he's a very talented fighter. The first time I saw his pro debut.
Very talented.
But I gotta say
about Javier Molina is that I think he's always gonna be in a tough matches because the power is really just not there. I mean, he lands, he's very accurate, precise with his punches. But I was there live, and you could hear the difference from, you know, from a Joel Diaz Jr. to a Guy Robb to a Rigondeaux. And they're punching, the sound of their punching from a Molina. It doesn't have that echo. It doesn't have that thump. Even with Brandon Gonzalez, I know, and I've argued with people, and they're like, he's not a puncher. He couldn't even, you know, hold off Ozzie Duran. And I would counter it with neither was Kirtland. He couldn't hold him off, you know. There's some guys, you just can't take them out of the park, man. You're not going to knock it out of the park. Brandon Gonzalez is a very talented kid, man. I've been high on that guy since witnessing him, knowing about him. Molina, same thing. Got great, great talent. But the only difference here is that Brandon's got more pop to his game than Molina.
Yeah. That's very true. You know, Molina's got a little bit of hand issues, too, you know, early on. I don't know if that was a glove thing. I don't know what he wears, but or if it's just, you know, learning how to get wrapped in the pros. A lot of guys go through different hand wrapping guys. It's a long process
right.
Finding that person. was a fighter recently. I forget who it was. He was telling me that he ended up just wrapping his own hands because the people around him just didn't know how to do it. And it was Angulo, actually, we were talking about it, when he first switched trainers. And they were like, this other guy to wrap his hands, and he's a very specific way. I don't know if you've ever seen or looked at Alfredo's hands up close. He's got kind of wide palms, but his fingers are kind of more delicate than you would realize.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those things, like everybody kind of, Oscar De La Hoya had the same guy wrap his hands for years. Floyd's the same way. I think they actually have the same guy that wraps their hand. So I wonder about Javi. You know, he's certainly got the tools. I mean, I've watched him, like I said, from his debut. He's a very talented young fighter. I just wonder, you know, how he's going to be now at an older age. Is he going to start to? When is he going to start to physically mature and be able to push people around as well as box beautifully? Because he boxes beautifully.
Oh, he does. I mean, he's got great. He's got there's a graceful way of his, you know, his moving in the ring, and yeah, and the fact that you're bringing up the whole hand wrap thing too, because you know I don't think a lot of people they factor that the fact that if there's a little bit of gap and if you've never wore gloves and never wore hand wraps, you know, when you talk about hand wraps, like I like make sure that my wrist is tight, you know, I don't know why, but I've always been that way. I like to feel the wrap on my wrist, you know, so that I feel that it's protected because I use my jab so much, you know. But if there's just a hint of looseness between your wrap, which is, I mean, your fist, the wrap, and the glove, that really throws you off of your game. I don't know if you've ever encountered that, Gabriel, but I have, and it throws you off because now your mind is thinking, your hand is basically just kind of, you know, herky-jerking in the glove, and you end up kind of losing that focus, you know, and there's like little things in there. I had a chance to talk to one guy at work, and we were talking about shoes, and we were talking about little things. And I told him, if you've never got in the ring, if you've never fought, you'd be surprised the littlest thing that could really, really honestly just throw you off. Like, for instance, my youngest son, if he said, I'm going to have an off day today in sparring, guess what? He had not just an off, it was really off. So I used to always tell him, don't say that. Don't put that in your mind because you're already walking in with that effort being left out in the ring. So absolutely, man. I like what you said there. Let's move on to our fight schedule. Yeah.
It's very true. I mean, I've gone through a bunch of different people teaching me how to wrap my hands. Jesse Reed, Freddie Roach, Pepper Roach, a bunch of different guys at the wild card. It really changes. Like, you know, I made it a point. It was around the Angulo Margarito thing, but even before that, I made a point of kind of learning how to, all the different ways to wrap your hand. And some guys, you know, like to go with every knuckle. Jesse Reed actually doesn't do every knuckle, you know, of wrapping the gauze all the way through. He kind of leaves it open. Everybody's got their own different way, and I now have a very specific way that I wrap my hands. Kind of it's an art. It's also very much a personal preference thing.
Right. Absolutely. So what else we got in store for us there on the weekend? You know, which is going to be a great weekend. That's actually tomorrow we're having a barbecue for my grandfather who's hitting 80 years old. 80, the big 8-0.
Wow.
So I'm right now, while we're on the radio, I can hear family members walking into my house, getting the party started. So I'm missing out. Missing out on the party over here.
Feeling things. Yeah. At the DoubleTree Hotel in Ontario, California, Artemio Reyes, 15-2 versus Enrique Gutierrez, 10-4. Excellent fight. Jonathan Arellano, 12-0-1 versus Jose Barranza, 35-23-2. That's major disparity in experience.
That's another special fighter too, Jonathan.
I really enjoy his work.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that kid. He gets his shot. I can feel it. It's not coming this year, but it's definitely coming a lot sooner than what we are anticipating or thinking.
And Alan Martinez, 12-1-1. He's actually a Boxing 360 guy that they just signed. He trains out here in L.A. And he's taking on fan favorite Ramon Valadez. This kid is always in excellent fights. He's a very just all action oriented kid. there was a four rounder. I know everybody saw it. We were all watching it online on Fight Night Club. It was the one night. It was like the second or third
time.
Oh,
I remember. That was a great. That was last year, right?
I think it was early on in their series. Scott, it must have been last year, early last year.
It was
one of the best four rounders. Everybody was like, it asked the question, can a four rounder be fight of the year? Because it was just that good. Ramon is going to be in action. And Alan Martinez, I haven't had a chance to really see him work, but I've heard great things about him. And he's a very special fighter. And he kind of stepped away. He's back. That's going to be a good card. I'm going to be there. So at least that's my plan. I'm just looking at Alan. He hasn't – he's just kind of like an under-the-radar dude. You know, he's out of Michoacan, Mexico. He's 12-1, one draw. He's got eight knockouts. This is going to be just all action. This is what I'm talking about, the Doubletree. This is a Thompson boxing card. If you haven't gone out to them, make a point of going out to them because it's just – great fight fans. It's just jam-packed. It's the absolute, ultimate club show environment. It's really fun stuff. So I'll be there tomorrow night, probably with Mr. Steve Kim and the rest of the gang. Now, moving on to Saturday night, main event at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. On Showtime, Golden Boy Promotions, Victor Ortiz, 29-3-2, versus Thompson Boxing's Josecito Lopez, 29-4. Underneath that support is Lucas Matisse, 30-2, versus Humberto Soto, 57-7-2. Boy, I like these fights. I like both these fights a lot. I think Lopez is a guy that's kind of like a Mauricio Herrera. He can get in there close. He's got some skill to him. He's got some nice cagey defense, but he also brings the action. Victor Ortiz, we know exactly who he is, depending on the night. He's either all action and is coming after you. I'm going to deal with him in his present as opposed to taking him back to the Marcos Maidana fight. I think he's mentally past that. He had that mental lapse against Floyd Mayweather. It cost him, and this is his first fight back. He seems really confident. He seems like he should be the guy that wins. He's got all the knockout power. Josecito, he thinks that he's got enough power to keep him honest. His first fight moving up at the higher levels to welterweight. I want to go with Victor Ortiz just because of the fight in September. It seems like a preordained thing. But I think this is going to be an absolute war. I think it's going to be a very fun fight.
This is how I'm looking at it, and this is how I want to paint it. I think Josecito Lopez goes for it, doesn't really respect the accomplishments that Ortiz has done. But Ortiz is obviously the bigger guy, the bigger puncher, the more mobile guy, the more quick-handed fighter in this fight here. In truth, on paper, the way, no matter how you turn it, how many times you spin it around, Victor Ortiz should win this fight. Even with this bit of a setback with Floyd Mayweather, he still was all action. You know, he still was trying to go for the win, but he got Galata. He just couldn't stop fouling. Lopez to me is going to have to be a little bit of a Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. on that night, Saturday night. He's going to have to test his chin. He's going to have to find out how good his chin is, because we know his heart is big, but it's just his chin. How world of a class chin does he have? Does he have a Sugar Shane chin? We don't know that yet. You know, I mean, he took pretty good, decent punches from a Jesse Vargas, but Vargas is not nearly as quick or as hard as a puncher that Ortiz is. But we've seen Ortiz kind of shell up and look baffled when you do apply pressure, when you do get in there and you push him back and what Josecito Lopez, I like, he could land body shots, and he is a volume puncher. But he can get stuck in that moment and leave himself open just enough where the lights are going to be turned off. And I think that might happen here. You know, Gabe, I could see Victor Ortiz stopping Josecito Lopez in the middle rounds, giving him a whole lot of problems before he stops him, where it leaves the only way to go out is on your shield. So I'm going to go with Victor Ortiz in mid-round stoppage. Even though I think Lopez does have the tools to upset Ortiz, I'm just not sold on the fact that his chin can keep him holding up for 12 rounds at a welterweight fight.
Yeah, I wonder about it. You know, I mean, if he's going to be able to take that pounding. I'm not going stoppage. I'm going to go decision. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Victor, he's got all the intangibles. He's got everything kind of on his side. He should pull this one out. So that's what I'm going with. Lucas Matisse versus Humberto Soto. This is an interesting fight. I've always liked Soto, but as soon as he hit 135 pounds, it was like his power went away. You know, he was kind of a big guy. He always kind of reminded me a little bit of Trinidad, not in terms of his power, but his technique is very straight punches. He's got a nice left hook, but he likes to lead with that right hand and then kind of come back with the hook, much the way Trinidad did. He would kind of go fishing with the lead right hand, and then he'd open up thinking, oh, he's going with a lead. He's not using a jab, and then boom, you're knocked out by a left hook. That was Humberto Soto for a long time. He's definitely a nice technician. He can box well. He can move well. He's got solid defense. He's tough as hell. But I really like Lucas Matisse in this fight, and I'm taking him. I think he wins the decision. He can possibly get a stoppage because he's a natural 140. He's got real power. He's got a nice ring IQ. He boxes just enough to set up and deliver that power. I think third time's a charm. I don't think he gets robbed in this one. I think he pulls it out and gets a decision.
I like that fight too. Humberto Soto to me is a great technician, got great boxing skills. You know, to me, he's a guy though that he takes on fights that I think he feels that are winnable to him. And I think he thinks it's winnable with Matisse's for Soto. You know, I think he sees him as like, well, this guy doesn't have the greatest skills. He kind of loose punches. But I think he's underestimating the size difference and the punching power. You know, I mean, you can outbox the kid. I don't think anybody would argue that point that Soto can outbox him. But I think the way this guy is resentless in his skill and the determination that Lucas does bring to this match, I think that's going to spell a lot of troublesome for Humberto Soto. I think Humberto Soto can get hurt in this fight. I think that it's going to revert down to that the only way to keep him off of him is to walk himself back to those ropes. And that's where, to me, Matisse is going to have a little bit more fun with them and possibly be able to get a stoppage off of Humberto Soto. Humberto Soto has been having a great run, but I think it's going to end up, that streak is going to finally just stop. It's going to stop because it was waited. He waited too long for that notable and signifying fight. That's my pick. I think that Matisse should be able to stop him in the late rounds.
Yeah, I think he's just, you know, I'm not sure about stoppage, but you know, that question is always answered pretty right off the bat. If the guy can land his power, and then the other question is, can the other guy take the power when it does land? We'll find that out pretty fast. I mean, Soto, I think, is a wily enough vet that he should be able to play the four corners offense if he really needs to, and just kind of be defensive and get away and extend the fight. But I really like Lucas in this fight. I think he's grown by leaps and bounds in his last few fights.
But let's put in note though that, you know, he is a seasoned vet. He's a wily vet. Absolutely, I agree with that. But a wily and a seasoned vet against really smaller guys. I mean, Anthony Leon is a guy that, you know, had boxing skills and had decent punching power and was big for his weight division, you know. But when you're a smaller man fighting smaller guys, you're able to cope with, you know, those adversaries. He's now moving up. He's jumping up with another guy that's much bigger, in my opinion, a much bigger man with a bigger punch, you know, and it's bringing something a little bit more to that table, you know, where Soto, to me, he's fighting father's time in his career. And fighting father's time against a guy that could take you out with a punch and a guy that's given fits to a Judah and others out there, you know what? You're playing with fire. There's no smoke in this one. This is going to burn.
It's going to be an interesting fight. I mean, to me, you know, Ortiz Lopez is fun, but Soto Matisse was a fight that when they originally announced this card, I was very excited about, and I still am. I'm kind of almost going to the Staples just to see that. But that and I'm you know, going to enjoy beer and sit in the stands. in support, Jermell Charlo, 17-0 versus the Mama's Boy, Dennis Douglas.
Mama's Boy.
Fortune in one. Thurman, rounds out that card.
We've had Mama's Boy on as I believe it was on our prospect watch, one of them. Nice kid, you know. But
yeah.
Would you want to be the guy that lost to Mama's Boy? Like you lost to Mama's Boy?
Yeah, you lost a guy named the Mama's Boy. He's taking on Marcos Maidana, Keith Thurman. This is an interesting fight too. Keith, this is actually I think they've moved this. This is July 21st. Am I crazy? I'm looking at the wrong fight schedule. I am crazy. Randy Caballero, 14-0 versus Jamal Parham, 5-5-1. Randy, they kind of snuck him right in on that card. But he's another guy that's very fun to watch.
Very fun to watch. And he's really been out, too, because of the whole injury. He was active. I mean, we're talking about this kid was active. He was fighting, you know, practically every other month. And they had to do a little bit of slow-mo for him because of the injuries and stuff, which is rightfully so. When you're fighting so actively, there's going to be injuries in that line. So glad to see him back in there. I know our publicist, Jesse Garcia Red, he's going to be at the Staples too as well in the corner of Randy Caballero.
And then, Randy, you know, I think it was actually kind of good for him to get that little rest. He was working pretty hard all the time. And, you know, you got to heal up. You got to kind of rest. And also, but you got to kind of sit back and examine yourself. I think if you're doing too much and you're on the grind, you do improve. I think fighters should fight more often. But you can get blinders on and not really see what you're doing. At the Sportsman's Lodge, Studio City, California, on Telefutura, Rico Ramos, 20-1 versus Fran Escavias, 16-0 for the Ring Magazine number 10 junior featherweight versus unranked. I'm going Escavias. I think we're both going Escavias.
Yeah. I got Escavias. Yeah, you know, and I know there was a couple people that were asking me on Twitter, who do I have? And I hope people don't take this offensive. They don't take this to an offense is that I don't answer. It's because I really like to just kind of hold my thoughts and tell the radio show. It gives me a chance to really kind of just, you know, dissect it, analyze it, and just kind of take it all in. So that's why I don't sometimes answer right away, unless I'm just going to be bold about it and say, oh, okay, this one, that one. But when the time of it was announced, I was excited about Rico Ramos and Efren going at it. You know, in the beginning of it, I honestly was not thinking Efren would have a, you know, I didn't think he would take this match. I didn't think he would win the match, meaning that. But looking more and more into it, I'm like, this is the perfect time for Efren. I'm glad that he's getting this match, and this is a great way of getting himself out there by beating a guy that a lot of folks were really high on. So I have him by decision.
Cool. I want to take him decision. I think he you know, Ramos will not get knocked out. He'll be able to handle this. But I think his offense is just too sporadic, you know. And
right.
he's never really quite telling a story. Like, his jab doesn't lead to anywhere. There's no body shot that set up something in the middle of the fight that leads to something late. He just kind of gets by on athleticism, moving around. He's got good power, but
he doesn't
he's not a believer.
You know the thing about Rico. To me, Rico Ramos is a good guy that he overall he's got good skills. You know what I mean? Like, how could I put it? He's almost like a kid that could write really good, have really pretty writing on paper, but instead he chooses to kind of chicken scratch. You know, he's kind of all over the place. He's really hyper. He doesn't know how to settle down. He doesn't really know. He just really kind of just goes on the fly. You know, and he lacks that ring intelligence of kind of painting the picture in his head and following it, you know, following that picture, putting in the right colors in his picture. He doesn't do that, you know, and I've saw that from way back, you know, even when Goose and Tudor, seeing him at the Tashi Palace, I even told that to the Goose and Tudor. I said, he could see it physically. You could see that he's got skills, but he still hasn't zoned down on it. He still hasn't got it underneath him to know how to use it. You know, what's the point of having all the right tools if you don't know how to use them? So that's
yeah,
that.
That's the thing. I agree with that, though. Yeah, it is. I like the way you put that, the chicken scratch. Just kind of like, I'll just kind of get through. But there's no story. Yeah, there's nothing actually happening. That bothers me. I think Efrain is going to be more consistent in the fight, and I think that's what's going to be the difference. In support there, John Molina Jr., 23-1, versus Miguel Munguia, 25-23-1. Obviously, you know, Mr. Molina is scheduled to fight Antonio DeMarco. They're not going to do anything to screw that up. So I say mid-round knockout. Sean Estrada is taking on the dreaded TBA. Matthew Villanueva, 7-0-1, versus Bruno Escalante, who's 5-0-1. This should be a fun fight. And then moving on, at the Centro de Usos Múltiples in Mexico, Hernan Marquez, 33-2, versus Arden Diale, 18-6-3, for the WBA World Flyweight Belt. I'm going with Marquez. I don't know. Call me crazy.
Yeah. Going Marquez too, man.
Yeah. And at the Killer Buzz Arena in Tuscaloosa.
Killer Buzz. I love that. That is a great name, man. You know what I mean? Like, hey, so where are you going to go to drink tonight? At the Killer Buzz.
Yeah, we're going to get a Killer Buzz at the Killer Buzz. Deontay, could he be Wilder, 22-0 versus Owen Beck, 29-10. That's actually, you know what? That's an interesting fight to me. I mean, I'm not saying Beck's going to win, but it is a nice step up in class. For Deontay Wilder. You know, I think Owen What the Heck Beck, one of my all-time favorite nicknames, he could do something. I mean, he hasn't won one in a long time. He hasn't won since August 21st of 2009, to be exact.
Right.
He's been knocked out a bunch of times. He'll probably get knocked out in this one. But he's got some, you know, there's a lot of people that just aren't very high on Deontay Wilder. I think he's a very raw prospect. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't think Beck wins, but it's an interesting fight. And, you know, somebody somewhere is going to get to say out loud, Owen, what the heck, Beck. And that's always a good thing because it's a great nickname.
Yeah.
That's
how he was throwing in on the card as an opponent. Like, oh, what the heck? How about Beck? Well, there you go. That's the end
there
of our
go.
Fight.
Yeah. That's scheduled. Speaking of Mexico, I just made a trip down to El Centro, California. I might as well. I know people kind of wanted to hear about this a little bit. I went and visited Alfredo Angulo at the Service Processing Center down there in El Centro. I can't really, you know, it's a hard story to write because he's got a hearing in late July. It sounds like it's going to be like he's going to be released. They're hopeful. They say it's a very fair judge, good judge. What I can say at this point, I'm literally writing the story right now and kind of checking with his lawyers because I don't want to screw up the case. It's not so
I would like you to save it until next week, to tell you the truth.
I'll just be really quick, you know, the point of me bringing this up. I can't really go into specifics, and I'm going to write the story and kind of clear it with his lawyer because I don't want to prejudice his case. I don't want to screw it up. I know ESPN, ABC, Fox, and ESPN Deportes are all going down there to try to talk to him and do his story. What I can say is that this has nothing to do with all those rumors that he was, he'd been deported before and all this stuff
right.
that happened in the two-parter article that I wrote. It has nothing to do with any of that. He's still there. Nothing to do with it. So
and some of the rumors too that people have sent me, like, oh, he was drug trafficking before, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was just like, okay.
I kind of just tell people, stop telling me those things because they're not true.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with the present. But a lot of that stuff is just kind of propaganda. He's an illegal alien and this and that. And he was deported and he can't be here for 7 to 10. That's not true. So just stop calling me. Stop tweeting that at me. Stop saying that to me because I actually know the truth. So in this particular situation. So he's in good spirits. He misses boxing fans very much. He misses going to the fights. And if you go to fights regularly, he was always there.
Right.
I hope that he gets out. And that's pretty much what I wanted to impart is those two things. It has nothing to do with the past, and he misses everybody. And he hopefully wants to come back. And he's doing as well as can be expected. I was actually shocked at how his attitude. He was joking, and it was a trip. So I'll share that with you next week.
There we go. here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk, you know, where we try to give as much information. I hope you guys enjoyed the show with Larry O. Being suspended for 4 years for using 13 different types of substances and was tested and caught. But then he was the one that was willingly to reveal what was going on in his career and in his body here on Leaving the Ring. So before you're quick to judge, listen to the interview and give us your take on it and give us your take on what he had to say and how we could clean up the sport and the rest of the information. I got to go back and listen to it. It was such a good interview. A lot of information here on that interview alone that it's warranted to have a second listen to because there was things in there that we obviously missed and didn't tackle. But that's why we're going to have them again here on Leaving the Ring, among other people and other things, other topics that we're after, and hopefully we can get some clarification that when we do have each individual guest here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Make sure you guys listen to Sunday night, The Boxing Fix. It's the Boxing Blitz radio show, the sister station of Leaving in the Ring. Get the guys over there, do a fantastic job. It's 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. Get your fix after the big fights on Saturday night. Make sure if you're Spanish-speaking and you just didn't have enough, you just don't get enough of listening people talk about boxing, tune in Noche de Boxeo, Monday night, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern. And here always, on Thursday night, myself with my partner, Gabriel, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. Chin, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, Thursday night, Leaving the Ring Radio, 3 hours of boxing talk. Hey, enjoy the weekend, enjoy the fights, enjoy your family, don't drink and drive, and Gabriel, if you're going to be drinking at the Staples, make sure you find yourself a designated driver. Fans, if you're out there and you see Gabriel out there, man, give a big shout out. Hang out with my boy, he's really fun, man, I'll tell you that. A lot of people got the wrong perception of the dark cloud. Trust me, there's some sunshine to the dark cloud. Don't be intimidated by his American Me hairstyle, though. Don't be intimidated. You know, it's not going to little puppet you or anything like that.
Oh, serious. Little puppet. And it's actually even shorter. I shaved it down even further today. So look for the bald Mexican, all black. That's me.
There you go.
Yeah, definitely come up and say what's up. I love to talk to people that love this sport. And yeah, I'm a pretty wide open guy. And so, yeah, do that. Buy me a beer. Dave, I will see you very soon. Great show as always. Man, I want to go back and listen to that interview. It was pretty mind-blowing. I'm still kind of in shock from it. And I'll see you at the fights.
I'll see you at the fights, brother. You take care. Good night, everybody. Have a good one.
Peace.